well. It's very important, and it's important because tomorrow does matter. So please stay tuned for the Peter B. Collins Show coming up after the CBS News right after this.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. Great news in the fight against some deadly cancers. CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato.
Two types of cancer considered incurable, two promising treatments. For the first time, a drug is extending the lives of advanced liver cancer patients, even though in most cases it's only a few months. Nexavar stopped some tumors from growing, a breakthrough. And the co-inventor of a drug called Bexxar reports a simple one-week treatment has long-term benefits for people with a common type of lymphoma.
About two-thirds of patients remained in complete remission, no relapse, no evidence of disease at 8 years.
Dr. Mark Kaminsky shares Bexxar royalties. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
Just because an Al-Qaeda-connected video claims that two missing American soldiers have been killed does not mean the search will end for them.
All 6,000 troops that are in the area continue that search. Operations continue. People are still being questioned. All the things that we are doing to attempt to get our soldiers back, those continue to go on and will continue to go on, regardless of this video or not.
Coalition spokesman Lieutenant Colonel Christopher Garber. The video does not offer proof, though the military ID cards of the two missing soldiers were displayed. Louisiana Democrat Congressman William Jefferson faces decades in prison, if convicted, of the corruption allegations brought against him by the Justice Department today.
Mr. Jefferson corruptly traded on his good office and on the Congress where he served as a member of the United States House of Representatives to enrich himself and his family through a pervasive pattern of fraud, bribery, and corruption.
U.S. Attorney Chuck Rosenberg, Jefferson's defense lawyer Robert P. Trout.
Congressman Jefferson maintains his innocence, and he urges the public to suspend judgment until the facts have been established in a court of law.
Paris is in the pokey. Paris Hilton, symbol of spoiled privilege and celebrity, is in the women's jail in Los Angeles County. She faces as much as 3 weeks for violating her drunk driving probation.
Her attitude is, I'm going to come in here, I'm going to do my time, I'm going to get it over with, and I'm going to show the world who I really am.
That's Richard Hutton, Hilton's lawyer. Bill France Jr. has died. The name France has been synonymous with North American stock car racing, NASCAR, for decades. Bill France founded it. Bill Jr. ran it for more than 30 years. And CBS's Paul Kaminsky says grew it to one of the biggest spectator sports in the world.
Took it from the Southeast and Saturdays and Sundays to prime time and Madison Avenue and the Waldorf Astoria, and a sport that transcends the borders of the Southeast. It's coast to coast.
Bill France Jr. was 74. In Bautzen, Germany, three teenagers are off the hook. Farmer took them to court claiming the firecrackers they lit near his ostriches left one of them impotent. The judge said you can't prove that's what did it. Charges dropped. Wall Street, the Dow gained 8 points. NASDAQ picked up 4. Oil, $66.21 a barrel, up $1.13. This is CBS News.
A dozen for you today, hon?
Yeah, give me a few jellies, some Boston cream, a couple of crumbly peanuts, and some peace of mind, please.
Coming right up, sir.
What if you could buy peace of mind? Well, you can with Ford Lincoln and Mercury certified pre-owned vehicles, because we notice everything. Everyone must pass a 115-point inspection, and it's all backed by our 6-year, 75,000-mile warranty coverage. Now that's peace of mind.
And I'll have some total satisfaction as well.
See your dealer for limited warranty coverage details, or visit FordCPO.com. That's FordCPO.com.
What's on your summer travel wish list? The beach? Your mom's? Someplace you've never been? Well, Econo Lodge and Roadway Inn Hotels are giving you a free $50 gas card this summer to go anywhere your heart desires. With our Easy Choice Rewards program, just redeem 6 stamps for your free $50 gas card. After all, your wish list awaits. Call 800-4-CHOICE or visit choicehotels.com today. We'll see you there.
Earn 1 stamp per night. Maximum 5 stamps for qualifying stay. Redeem 6 stamps between 6-1 and 8-16-07 to receive gas card. For details, visit easychoiceonline.com.
It would be a mighty tame radio contest by U.S. standards, but in Singapore, it's enough to get the radio station fined. Women raced to see who could remove her bra the fastest with the blouse on and hold it high in the air for the stopwatch. The whole thing was videotaped for a webcast. Indonesian censors found it suggestive and negative for younger listeners, and they reminded DJs of the influence they have on young people. The Spanish anthem is one of the few in the world that has no words. Sounds like it ought to. At athletic venues, when the anthem is played, players stand around humming or looking up at the sky or maybe the flag. Now a committee is being formed to write words for the Spanish anthem. They've tried this before, but arguments ruled the day. Poets and writers couldn't find lyrics everyone in Spain's fiercely identified regions could agree on. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Hey, Tanya Roberts here, and I want to know, where are you going on your next romantic getaway? Well, how about 3 days and two nights in Las Vegas? And what about, you don't pay a dime for it? That's right, act like a high roller in Vegas and pay nothing for it. It's all part of our celebration of Vegas's newest five-star resort, Tahiti Village. We want you to get out of Dodge, stir up a little romantic magic in the most exciting city on earth with a complimentary second honeymoon, all on Tahiti Village. Come on. You know you deserve it. You know you want it. Las Vegas is calling. So stop what you're doing and call this special toll-free number, 866-40-GO-NOW. Oh, and as a bonus, if you call right now, they're going to throw in tickets to a hot show right on the strip. Can we say high roller treatment, baby? So call 866-40-GO-NOW for all the exciting details. That's 866-40-GO-NOW. Call now.
Okay. Something zippy was supposed to happen right here. Let's try this. There it is.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B. And be part of Peter B.'s America.
I knew we could do it. I just knew it. And when technical problems occur here at the Peter B. Collins Show, there's only one guy to blame. Thumbs himself, Mr. Collins. We've got a lot to talk about today, and just 3 hours to do it. Shall we get started? Coming up in just a moment, Jameson Fosser joins us from Media Matters for America. We'll take a look at the media's performance in the past week or so. About half an hour from now, we're going to talk to former U.S. Attorney Elizabeth De La Vega. And she has no sympathy for Scooter. Scooter's going to court tomorrow to find out his fate. Judge Reggie Walton will sentence him. And Elizabeth De La Vega has absolutely no sympathy. She's one of those hard-nosed, lock-em-up federal prosecutors. We'll get her take on what Scooter can expect in the courtroom tomorrow. And about an hour from now, Robert Perry, a very distinguished investigative journalist who operates the website ConsortiumNews.com, will join us. A couple of the things we'll talk about, recent posts of his. Bush's killer talking points beat the Democrats on the funding for the occupation. Bush's new aspirations on global warming. And the case of Rafiq Hariri and the newly announced United Nations Tribunal to investigate his assassination. And our third and final hour will be devoted exclusively to your phone calls. We call it the Free Speed Zone. And in between now and then, you're also welcome to call toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. My email is peter@peterbcollins.com. And that's how people reach me. You're welcome to drop me a note with comments, criticism, ideas for shows that you think we ought to be doing, featuring guests that you haven't heard or topics that you think are missing. That's always welcome. Your input is desired, and we respond to it. So drop me a note, peter@peterbcollins.com. Jameson Fosser joins us now from Media Matters for America. Their website is mediamatters.org. Powerful stuff there, and I recommend it to you if you, for some reason, have never stopped by. J-Mo, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you, Peter?
I'm doing okay. A lot of people have been sending me messages, and I realized that I blew it. Yesterday, there was a parade of Democrats on CNN, loosely called a debate. But we were having a little get-together to watch The Sopranos, Whackfest, second-last episode. I forgot all about the Democratic presentation. Did you have a chance to watch that?
I did, and I was struck by some of the questions Blitzer asked, Wolf Blitzer asked the candidates. He was the moderator hosting it for CNN, and a couple of times he asked them questions that were pretty misleading. I'm eager to see how he does tomorrow night when he moderates a Republican debate. But he asked the Democrats, for example, some of the Democrats, basically why they voted against funding for the troops, which is accepting a very Republican framing for what happened in Congress a few weeks ago. But even if you do accept that framing, that a vote against a version of the funding bill for the war is voting against troops rather than voting against the war, even if you do accept that framing, you could ask the same question of John McCain tomorrow night. John McCain voted against one version of the bill and for another version, as did Sam Brownback. So I'm curious to see if Wolf Blitzer is going to ask them tomorrow night, why did you vote against funding for the troops?
Mm-hmm.
Somehow I don't think he will, but in the interest of fairness and balance, he should.
Yeah.
Or better yet, he should ask them, given that they, like the Democrats, voted for one version and against another version, if it wouldn't be hypocritical for Republicans to attack Democrats for voting against the troops, given that Republicans voted the same way or with the same pattern. I doubt he'll ask that, but I think that anybody who's interested in these debates having some semblance of fairness might want to contact CNN in the next day or so and ask that they do so.
And how would you rank the performance of CNN as a host of these group appearances compared to Fox and MSNBC?
Well, Blitzer made a pretty big deal up front about the beginning of the debate about the fact that CNN wouldn't have a bunch of fancy bells and whistles like Fox did. He didn't mention Fox by name, but that was clearly a shot at the sort of gimmickry of the Fox debate.
Mm-hmm.
And I did appreciate that CNN left some of that out. We didn't have the sort of loud, carnival bells going off when candidates went over time.
What? No,
that was a nice touch.
No whooshes?
No whooshes. unfortunately, Blitzer did kind of adopt the MSNBC style of asking candidates to raise their hands if they wanted to answer yes to a particular question.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really a pretty old gimmick at this point. The reality is that most of these questions require more detailed answers than you can give by raising your hands. And I think the public would be better served by seeing the candidates actually explain in some detail what they think and what they would do as president, and just having them all in a line try to hold up a hand or reduce these complicated questions to yes or no answers isn't very helpful. And in fact, it was kind of heartening to see that the candidates during the course of the debate kind of rebelled against this. And by the third or fourth time that Blitzer asked them to raise their hand to indicate their position on a complicated issue, several of the candidates pretty much revolted and said, we're not going to do that. We need more information. We need a more detailed question, and we need to give a more detailed answer. And so hopefully that has kind of put a stop to this, and in debates going forward, we won't see as much of that kind of thing. Blitzer actually at the beginning of the debate had a very telling comment in setting up for the viewers the format, said, hopefully the candidate's answers will be around a minute, maybe even less sometimes. We can only hope. Now, why on earth would we want the candidates to give less detailed answers? That's the part I don't understand, is at what point did it become a value rather than something to try to fight for candidates to just give short, pithy sound bites without any substance behind them?
Yeah.
That always used to be something that reporters complained about, and now you had Wolf Blitzer openly cheering for it and asking for it and begging for it.
Well, and JMO, the other thing that I've seen, again, on the previous outings, is that the moderators are very clearly preferring the front runners and giving them more attention, more questions, and more time to answer the questions, instead of saying, what is your position on this, and letting each of the candidates offer a response.
Well, that's something that the Dodd campaign actually tracked during the course of the debate, the number of questions that each of the candidates were asked and the amount of time that they were given to speak. And I haven't checked their numbers, but I also haven't seen any indication that the numbers are wrong, and it was consistent with what I saw, and what their numbers showed was that Clinton and Obama, and to a slightly lesser extent, Edwards, were asked far more questions and had, particularly Clinton and Obama, had more time to talk than the rest of the candidates, and that Blitzer himself talked considerably more than most of the candidates, including Dodd and Richardson and Kucinich and Mike Gravel and Joe Biden. So certainly if last night was any indication, that is happening. These debates are giving more time to the perceived or anointed frontrunners. And that's consistent with what we've seen before. It is, you know, you can kind of understand why the New York Times on their front page might pay more attention to the handful of candidates who are polling best and have the most money and seem to have the best organization thus far. But in a debate format, there seems to be less of a reason for that. CNN had 2 hours last night. It wouldn't have been that difficult to cut out some of the more frivolous questions, like Blitzer asked every candidate what they would do, how they would use Bill Clinton in their administration if they were president.
Mm-hmm.
That's a completely meaningless question. That has, you know, there's no value to that other than the gimmick of the fact that he happens to be married to one of the candidates.
Right.
That's a question that he actually asked every one of the Democratic candidates. Well, if he has the time to ask every one of the Democratic candidates, how would you use Bill Clinton in your administration? He probably has the time to ask every one of the Democratic candidates, what exactly would you do to solve the health care crisis in this country? Or how would you get us out of Iraq? Or any number of other more substantive questions. So, you know, that's definitely something I'd like to see more of going forward, trimming out some of the meaningless questions and offering more opportunity for detailed discussion of some of the more meaningful questions that will really have an effect on where we go as a country and what our future is. And unfortunately, that's not something we've seen from any of the networks that have hosted these debates so far. CNN wasn't any worse last night than MSNBC was. They might have even been a little bit better. But the sort of disdain for substance, it seems to be something that all of the cable networks have shown so far.
Were the candidates quizzed about their position on a pardon for Paris Hilton?
They were not, thankfully.
Well, then we have some hope. We're going to take a break and return with Jamison Foser from Media Matters for America. And Media Matters just compiled and released a report on the extent to which religious leaders who appear in the media are overwhelmingly conservative religious leaders. We'll talk about that and much more as we continue here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540. Visit our website at krxa540.com.
P&T Puppet Theater reminds listeners, always keep a watchful eye out for all children. Remember, you can't keep an adventurous child from trying to learn, but you can keep track of him while he does. For help or information on the prevention of child abduction, call your local authorities. This message is courtesy of P&T Puppet Theater, serving our community with pride and integrity for years. Give them a call at 831-754-2411 or visit ptpuppets.com.
Why are realtors from Los Angeles spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to defeat Measure A here in Monterey County?
It sure isn't because they want to save our farmland.
The developers and supervisors oppose Measure A because it puts an end to their cozy development deals.
Cozy development deals like the massive Rancho San Juan development that was approved by the Board of Supervisors but rejected by 76% of voters.
It's true. 76% of the voters opposed Rancho San Juan because it was wrong for Monterey County. But the developers pushed it through anyway.
That's why we need to pass ballot Measure A to protect our quality of life.
Measure A is a common-sense, community-minded plan to control growth that was written by the people of Monterey County.
It lets the people decide how fast we should grow.
So join the League of Women Voters and the California Nurses Association, who all support Measure A, because it lets the community have a voice about our future.
And that's why the Community General Plan Committee paid for this message. Vote yes on Measure A.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Come on in, and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones. Everything's so tasty, you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a good affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine some falafel with crumble stew. A side of Christmas and a Bible solution. Open at 7 every day. Or have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery.
In PG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey, PG.
Hi, it's Sheila Gale reminding you to listen to my show, 12-Step Talk, Uncensored, all about addictions, every Saturday, 4 to 5 in the afternoon, 12-Step Talk, Uncensored, where we deal with addictions, taking the shame and the blame out of this horrible disease. 12-Step Talk, Uncensored, it's about time. Sponsored by Sun Street Centers, Building Healthy Communities, a drug and alcohol treatment center in Monterey County. For more information, call 753-5135, Sun Street Centers.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. If God arrived today, would the media cover it? I mean, there are whales and Paris Hilton and Lindsay Lohan.
What would it be and would you call it to his face if you were faced with him in all his glory? What would you ask if you had just one question? And yeah, yeah, God is great. Yeah, yeah, God is good. Yeah, 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 yeah. What if God was one of us? Just a flawed like one of us.
Well, unless God arrived here as a conservative and an evangelical one at that, chances are the media wouldn't even notice. And I raise that point because Media Matters released a study last week, and they've been monitoring the media and the way it treats people of faith and their leaders. And it's probably not a big shock, but it's worth noting that conservatives outnumber progressives by a margin of 2 or 3 to 1. Jameson Fosser continues with us. Jamo, how was this study conducted, and what is the disparity between progressive and conservative religious voices in America's media?
Sure. Well, this is pretty similar to some studies that I think you and I have talked about in the past, where we've tallied the number of Republican and Democratic guests on the Sunday shows, conservative and progressive guests on the Sunday shows. We've done some studies where we've looked at cable news and the number of women and minorities that they have as guests. We did a similar thing here. We counted the number of times that religious leaders were quoted or mentioned or interviewed in news stories on either television or in newspapers since the 2004 election. And we chose that time period because after the 2004 election, the media was full of stories about how this is a conservative nation and conservative religious values dominate. And so we wanted to take a look at what the coverage was like. And we found that conservative religious leaders were quoted, mentioned, or interviewed almost three times as often as progressive religious leaders. And on television, it was almost four times as often. And that's really a pretty striking imbalance. But it's consistent with the way the media treats religion and politics and religion and policy, where they present this as though people of faith are conservative. And that's obviously not true. If you just think about the fact that 90% of Americans describe themselves as religious and 30% of Americans describe themselves as conservative, that obviously leaves a whole bunch of people who are religious but are not conservatives. But if you just went by what you see on television and what you read in the newspaper, you wouldn't get that idea at all. The religious leaders who get that sort of national media attention are far and away conservative more often than they are progressive.
And JMO, your study covers the mainstream media, but it's important to note that religious conservatives have their own media. It's very powerful. You've got James Dobson, one of the most widely syndicated hosts in America. There's the Salem Radio Network with hundreds of so-called Christian radio stations that also carry Michael Savage and other right-wing hate mongers. That's my view. And that's off the radar. And just as one indicator, 10 years ago, I was producing an interfaith radio show that's produced in the Washington area called Interfaith Voices. And we promoted the show to all kinds of different radio outlets. But I particularly tried to get it on some evangelical radio stations. And they were not interested. They will only carry voices with whom they're in full agreement. And they didn't want to get involved with any progressives or any non-conservatives. They simply did not want that on their stations. And there's no fairness doctrine when it comes to religious broadcasters. They own the facility, and they can put any kind of religion programming on there that they want.
They do. They do. And what's almost more surprising than how exclusive they are, though, is when the mainstream media basically behaves in the same way. You know, it's one thing for James Dobson's radio network to only air conservative views. It's another thing when CNN covers religion and cover it as though all religious people are conservatives. You know, there's another little element of this that's pretty interesting and I think telling, in that whenever the media talks about religion and politics, they use phrases like values voters and moral issues, and when they do that, they're almost always referring to abortion and gay marriage. But in 1996, only 10% of evangelical Christians said abortion and gay marriage would be the most important factor in determining their vote. So even among evangelical Christians, abortion and gay marriage aren't dominant issues.
Mm-hmm.
In 2006, Zogby did a poll and showed that the, quote, moral issue cited by the most voters was the Iraq War. More than twice as many voters cited greed and materialism or poverty and economic justice as the most urgent moral crisis in American culture as those who cited abortion and same-sex marriage. So, again, the media's portrayal of what people of faith think is important and what issues they're most concerned with is way out of touch with what people actually believe.
Yeah.
And it creates this very warped sense of what people believe in this country and what people of faith care about, what issues are moral issues, what issues are values issues. The media presents this very narrow view of that that's consistent with what you hear from a Pat Robertson or the late Jerry Falwell, but isn't actually consistent with what most people believe.
Yeah. Read all about it at MediaMatters.org, and also read JMO's column under Jameson Fozer's byline about Chris Matthews and the very different treatment that Republicans get as compared to Democrats, in particular Fred Thompson versus John Edwards. It's a fascinating piece. Got time for a quick comment from Dave in Eureka. Thanks, Dave. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. I get the impression that the corporate media has pretty much selected a combination of Obama and Clinton for us, and they allow so little time for the Kucinich and Mike Gravel, who has, they have a big message to share with us, and they're not able to do it because they only allowed maybe 2 or 3 minutes during the 2 hours.
JMO, comment on that, 20 seconds, please.
Well, I think if people are concerned about that, and there's every reason why they would be, they should go ahead and contact CNN. my hosts until there's more debates. And if people don't like what they've been doing so far, contact them. Tell them you're not happy. Tell them why you're not happy. Tell them what you'd like to see them do better.
Thank you, J-Mo. This is the Peter B. Collins Show. Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
This is Todd the Taxi Driver, and today we're going to talk about urban legends and how you can participate in one tomorrow and help create a new one. Urban legend says that in either the 70s or the 80s, American consumers took one day and didn't buy gasoline. The legend says it worked. Gas prices dropped 30 cents a gallon by the next day. Sounds really good, but unfortunately, it never happened. But just because something didn't happen in the past, and it is an urban legend, doesn't mean it's not actually a good idea, and it can't have some positive results if people do it today. I personally believe that when any group of people get together and unite behind a common cause, it's a good thing. There are no losers. So tomorrow, don't buy gas. And who knows? Maybe it will make a difference. Maybe 5 years from now, there'll be the urban legend about how Americans reacted to an urban legend and really made a difference. This is Todd the Taxi Driver saying, don't let the truth or reality get in the way of changing the world.
Carmel's community bookstore, The Pilgrim's Way, is a locally owned independent bookstore and has been for nearly 40 years.
Discover for yourself our intimate and unique setting, including the secret garden, known locally as a hidden treasure in downtown Carmel. Our friendly staff at Pilgrim's Way are available to assist you with any personal needs or gift buying. And our book selection offers the best of personal development, local interest, bestsellers, novels, children's, and metaphysical, plus much, much more. We have great music and healing tools, cards, and garden statuary.
Visit us at www.pilgrimsway.com or call 624-4955 or visit the Pilgrim's Way, Carmel's only bookstore, and the Secret Garden on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in Carmel.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Doesn't it seem that the service is lacking at most service stations? Well, not at the Valero at Mid-Carmel Valley Shopping Center. We take care of our customers. We offer expert car repair at reasonable rates with a fast turnaround. We do tune-ups, brakes, safety checks, and a 26-point inspection with an oil change. We specialize in Lexus and Toyota, and our mechanic is ASE certified. Call us at 624-0722. That's 624-0722. Mid-Carmel Valley Valero, putting the service back in service stations.
In response to rising interest rates, Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage in Salinas offers the following advice to homeowners with variable rate loans. Don't panic or overreact. If you feel trapped in a frightening squeeze, first analyze your situation calmly, then take the best action available. There are so many types of loans, one is very likely to meet your particular needs. For a free consultation with Victor Munoz at Creative Mortgage, call 757-0436. Let Victor share with you the knowledge that he has built up over many years in the mortgage industry. Call Victor at 757-0436 today.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Hear ye! Hear ye! The
Colts in session. The Colts in session. Now, here come the judge. Here come the judge.
Here come the judge.
In the case of U.S. versus I. Lewis Libby, it's time for a sentence.
Colts, here come the judge.
And tomorrow, Scooter will roll into the courtroom. Don't you imagine that Scooter has some of those shoes, you know, with the wheels built in, like you see kids at the airport or the shopping mall? Yes, he will be in Reggie Walton's courtroom in Washington, D.C. to face the music and see how many turnings of the aspens will occur while he's behind bars. And to comment on it, we turn to former assistant U.S. attorney in San Jose, California, Elizabeth De La Vega. She has written a powerful book called The U.S. versus Bush et al., and she joins us on the phone again this afternoon. Hello, Elizabeth De La Vega.
Hi, Peter. How are you doing?
Doing okay. Probably a little better than Scooter and his family.
I would say, yeah. That music sounds really fun, but I don't think it's going to be fun for Scooter Libby tomorrow.
You don't think it's going to be a laugh-in moment for him?
No, I really don't. In fact, I think that there's a very good likelihood he's looking at prison time. Now, whether the judge will detain him immediately or not, I don't know.
And we can only speculate on this, but wouldn't you speculate that he is being trained to say things very carefully, should he speak at all in the courtroom tomorrow, because his probable way out of this is a presidential pardon?
Right. He is in a very sticky situation, because on the one hand, when you go before a judge for sentencing, the best thing to do is to accept responsibility and be apologetic. But in order to do that, you have to say that you did something wrong. And according to a sentencing memorandum, he has not done anything wrong, according to Scooter Libby. So that's one problem. And then if he goes in front of the judge and says he did something wrong, then he's kind of in trouble with the administration. So he is in a tough position.
Well, and humility has always been in short supply in the Bush administration. One wonders if it was surgically removed, you know, if there is a humility gland.
Right. Well, I can tell you, I've read a lot of sentencing memos over the years, and this one had a certain in-your-face quality that I haven't seen in very many memos. It was especially regarding the whole concept of grand jury investigations and FBI investigations. They were almost contemptuous of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. And Reggie Walton is a bit unpredictable, too. His sentencing history is that he's a pretty heavy-handed sentencer. And the other piece of the picture that I have, and this is purely anecdotal, I'll acknowledge that, is that he presided over the cases related to Sybel Edmonds, an FBI whistleblower who was most recently on our program last week. And he's the one who imposed the gag order that is linked to a very vague and loosey-goosey state secret privilege. And so when it comes to protecting the interests of the federal government, Judge Walton, at least in my limited experience and knowledge of his rulings from the bench, can be a very tough guy. On the other hand, it's very hard to read his political inclinations and how he views the Libby case at this stage.
Particularly because the question would be, which side does he view as representing the United States government? And because on the one hand, the case is United States versus Scooter Libby, so that would mean the prosecution is the government. But on the other hand, Scooter Libby was a member of the Bush administration, so that's another part of the government. So I think, though, in this case, I can't really explain anything about what he decided to do in the Sybel Edmonds case. But this case, he has given many indications that he does take the crime very seriously. And, of course, there are four counts on which the defendant was found guilty.
Well, and the other thing that, you know, really... really stands out in my memory of the trial proceedings is that it was pretty clear that Judge Walton was deeply miffed that Scooter Libby did not take the stand after all of the pretrial and early trial wrangling over admissibility of evidence and the need for some presidential daily briefs, etc. So it's going to be interesting to see if Judge Walton can rise above that, or if it's going to be factored into his sentencing decision.
Right. Well, of course, the defendant has the right not to take the stand, but you're right, this case was unusual in that there was so much pretrial litigation where the defense did indicate that Libby was going to take the stand, and I don't think the judge will hold that against the defendant in the sentencing, but I do think that he has shown in many of his rulings, and even recently the ruling about the letters that were filed on behalf of the defense, he indicated that this is a matter in which the public has intense interest and it's a very serious case. So I think that, and besides, the law itself does not favor the sentence that Libby wants, which is probation.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think this is the perfect time for you to give us a little primer here. Elizabeth de la Vega, as we mentioned, served in the U.S. Attorney's Office in San Jose for many years. And she has a piece that was originally written for TomDispatch.com. That's our friend Tom Englehart. And it's also posted right at the top of the right-hand column on the homepage of truthout.org. At least it was an hour ago when I stopped by there. Uh-huh. So, Betsy, tell us a little bit about the sentencing guidelines here and how they operate in a case like Libby's.
Okay, well, the sentencing guidelines are based on two main factors. One is somebody's criminal history, and as far as I know, Louis Libby has no criminal history.
So I think you're right.
He's in the lowest category there. And then there's a grid that ranks various offenses, and that's called the offense level. And so from those two factors in this case, the starting point, and everybody agrees on this, the probation office and the defense and the prosecution, the starting range is 15 to 21 months. So if the judge were to just go with that and not do anything up or down, that's a prison sentence. But in this case, the government has pointed out quite correctly that there are some aggravating factors or aggravating considerations that have to be added on to the sentence based on some little intricacies of the guidelines. And specifically, that has to do with the kind of crime that was being investigated when the perjury and the obstruction of justice took place. And I think the law is pretty clear that that factor should be considered. And if that factor is considered, Libby's looking at a sentence of 30 to 37 months.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on the other hand, first of all, your listeners should be aware that the judge doesn't have to follow these guidelines. They're advisory.
Yeah, if crack cocaine were involved, his hands would be tied and there'd be a minimum mandatory sentence.
Right. That's absolutely true. But there are many crimes for which there's no mandatory sentence. But having said that about the guidelines, they were required to be followed for many years, and most judges now are still following them pretty closely. So that would work against Libby. And the other thing is, he's arguing for probation, which requires what's called a downward departure. That means going outside the guidelines completely, and he's arguing, well, I should get a downward departure because, number one, this has been really hard on my family and myself. Well, that happens to every defendant.
Mm-hmm.
He also says, well, I'm going to lose my law license, and this has been financially difficult. Well, I'm sure you know that there's a Libby Legal Defense Trust, and so I don't really think Libby's going to be suffering a whole lot financially as a result of this.
He'll have to fend off, competing offers from right-wing think tanks.
Exactly. He's going to be coming out, and he'll be speaking and making a lot of money. And then he also says, well, this is an aberration. This is the only crime I've committed. The problem with that is that he did it four times over the course of actually more than a year. So you can't really say that's an aberration. And he has some other arguments that I can't recall right now, but none of them is very good.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that it would be quite a stretch for the judge to come up with a sentence of probation.
The other two elements here, Betsy, are he has an outstanding record of government service and he's unlikely to commit a crime in the future.
Oh, right, right. I'm glad you pointed those out. The first one, the outstanding record, well, as the government replied to that, you don't get a discount because you've been in federal service. And, in fact, it actually might work against him because he has a lot of experience in the executive branch, and which means he knows very well that one is not supposed to be divulging, even if you don't, even if you take the defense point of view that Valerie Plame was not covert, just for the sake of discussion.
Mm-hmm.
It was clearly classified information. It was clearly information that was government information that they weren't supposed to be using for their own personal interests.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big, big no-no, to say the least. And then the other idea that, tell me the other one again.
Oh, that he's unlikely to commit crimes in the future.
Oh, right, right. Well, that is counterweighed by the fact that in the memo, the defense has made it very clear that not only do they not think he violated any law, but they don't think he did anything wrong. So he apparently has learned nothing from this whole proceeding and certainly has admitted nothing.
Well, wait a minute. He's learned that it's best if you don't get caught when you do these things.
Well, this is true. This is true. And actually, that's kind of the tenor of the memo when they talk about why he wouldn't commit it in the future, because they say, well, this would be a good lesson in taking these grand jury proceedings very seriously. So that suggests that they're kind of archly viewing the whole matter, but certainly not saying, well, we know we have to tell the truth in the future. It's just that we have to be more careful.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the one thing that Libby has not attempted here is the rehab excuse. He's not following Mark Foley or Ted Haggard into, you know, some sort of rehab or psychological counseling as a way to create an excuse for his aberrant behavior.
No, he hasn't done that. In fact, the portrayal of him is that he's a very, and I have no reason to think otherwise, that he's a fine family man and lots of friends and an upright citizen and really has a stellar record in every way. So, no, they're not saying anything along those lines.
We're talking with Elizabeth De La Vega. She formerly was an assistant U.S. attorney in the San Jose District of the U.S. Attorney's Office of Northern California. She is the author of a great book called U.S. versus George W. Bush et al. And the piece we're talking about is available at truthout.org and at tomdispatch.com right now. It relates to the sentencing of Scooter Libby, which is scheduled for tomorrow, Tuesday, in Washington. We'll pick up there in a moment. If you have a question or comment, this is the perfect time for it. Call me now. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Visit our website at KRXA540.com.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
Tomorrow Matters, hosted by me, Deborah Lindsay, will be moving from Sundays to a daily spot Monday to Friday, 2 to 3 p.m. I'll still be bringing in the guests, and you'll still be calling in with your questions and ideas, and we'll still be working collectively to set the standards for a more sustainable future. But we'll be doing it 5 times a week. Starting May 14th, join me, Deborah Lindsay, right here on KRXA 540 a.m. for Tomorrow Matters, weekdays from 2 to 3 p.m., because for all of us, tomorrow really matters.
Hey, what are you having for lunch?
My personal chef is making it now.
Your personal chef?
Yeah, the lunch lady in the school cafeteria.
Kids should think of me as their personal chef. Well-balanced meals at school are very important for their bodies and their minds. Make sure they eat right and take advantage of the personal chef in their school cafeteria.
Stay fit, eat right. Looking Good California is a public service of the California School Nutrition Association. For help with your family's nutrition, visit stayfiteatright.org.
Result means that our investigation turned up nothing.
If somebody testified lying before a grand jury doesn't mean he's involved.
And it's flat out absurd. Bush was begging that governor on the Sunday before the hurricane hit to get people out of there and declare an emergency. It's all crazy propaganda. The Joseph Goebbels Network. Bush was on the phone with her. They were thinking about sending the military in because the state and local people weren't acting fast enough.
It is certain that some self-possessed judge somewhere will soon rule that three men are three women for me.
Yet Iraqis are united in a broad and deep conviction. 12 government ministries are currently under the direct control of Iraqis. I don't think that's too high a standard.
If you retire, you don't have anything to worry about. I'll probably say it 3 more times, see? In my line of work, you've got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in. You've got to catapult the propaganda.
Lies and deception.
Lies and deception. They move in one direction. And then you lose.
And then you lose. Some wisdom from an 80s rock band from England called The Stranglers. That one is Lies and Deception. And that's what led Scooter Libby to the point where he faces sentencing tomorrow in federal court in Washington, D.C.
Hang up and end up.
And we lost Elizabeth De La Vega. Brian, can you dial her right back, please? A little glitch in the system here. Betsy De La Vega, as we pointed out, served as an assistant U.S. attorney, a federal prosecutor here in California. She's authored a book called The U.S. versus George W. Bush et al. And I recommend to you the piece that's available at truthout.org today. It originated at tomdispatch.com, entitled Sentencing for Dummies, The Fate of I. Lewis Libby. And in it, I think we've got attorney back now. Thanks, Betsy.
Sure.
I wanted to ask you to summarize, as you do in the piece that you wrote, what your bottom line estimate is of the sentence that Judge Walton will deliver to Scooter Libby tomorrow.
Okay, well, I'm going out on a limb here, but if, for what it's worth, and of course I have no inside knowledge of Judge Walton, but I think the sentence is going to be in the area of 30 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then the issue is, if there's any jail time imposed, the issue is whether Libby will be allowed to remain out on appeal.
Right.
And the law is not in Libby's favor on that, because it requires that someone who has been sentenced must be detained unless the judge finds that there was enough of a serious error or enough of a substantial issue for appeal that it could result in a new trial.
Mm-hmm.
And that would mean, in other words, that the judge basically has to say he thinks there may be some serious mistakes in the case.
Well, that's like the judge wearing a button that says, please, reverse me.
Right, and it happens. You know, it happens a fair amount, because a lot of judges really don't like detaining people pending the appeal. So, but that's a really critical question in this case, because the next thing that kicks in is if this defendant, Libby, is told to report to prison next week, then the president has to decide, uh-oh, am I going to let this guy go to prison or not?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very interesting question, and I really have no prediction on that one.
Right. Okay. Now, the third part of your article is why the sentence Libby receives is the least significant aspect of the entire CIA leak investigation. And here what I'm inferring is that you and I have a common thought,
mm-hmm.
and that is that while Fitzgerald was pretty aggressive in pursuing Scooter Libby,
mm-hmm.
he didn't appear very interested in the other key players in the case, notably Karl Rove and Dick Cheney.
Well, my take on it is slightly different. I don't know. I do think that he explored those, and I think there are a number of reasons why those two weren't indicted. As to Cheney, for example, there are some really sticky issues with the Constitution, for example. Not so much as there would be if it were the president, but still, it's an issue. And then there are all these issues with classified information that would come up more so than they did in this case, and he was able to avoid them pretty much in this case. So, but my reason for saying that is that ultimately, I don't think criminal prosecutions are a vehicle to really address the issues that are raised by the CIA leak. And in fact, the CIA leak itself is just one part of this huge dysfunction that we have in the executive branch right now. And Congress, I think, is what we need to address it. So my purpose in saying that was really to say that criminal prosecutions are important, but they can't take the place of the oversight that Congress is supposed to do.
Well, I don't disagree with that, but I really feel that in order to convict Libby, and I want to be clear that I understand that he's not being convicted for leaking. He's being convicted for lying to the investigators and the grand jury. But still, there is an underlying case there, and I believe that that Fitzgerald whiffed on it, and I don't know exactly why.
See, I actually don't agree with you on that. I have thought this through quite a bit, and the difficulty, regardless of who the defendant is, with proving a crime under the Intelligence Identity Protection Act is that you have to prove something that's this covert element that you are not able to talk about in public. So you would have this situation where you would be required, on the one hand, to present evidence that the person was covert, which is, of course, classified information. And how do you put that into the public forum of a courtroom? So I think the statute itself is really kind of a catch-22, and I can't think of a way around it.
Well, I can understand that, but hasn't Valerie Plame Wilson taken care of that by resigning from the CIA and going to Henry Waxman's committee and testifying, yes, I was covert?
Right. Well, see, if you think about it from the point, I don't have any question that she was covert, by the way. I don't disagree with that. I think it's definitely true. And I think there are other ways that we know that, because I don't think the CIA would have made the referral. But to prove it to a jury, I do not think that would be proof beyond a reasonable doubt. If she went into court and simply said, I was covert, I don't think that would, and a defense would argue that that's not proof. It's just a conclusion. They need the underlying proof, because the jury would really have to decide the question. So that's the difficulty. So I don't agree with you on that one point.
Even though
I think you're a fine fellow overall.
That's fine, and you're welcome to disagree with me. I don't take it personally. The other aspect is that it's just very clear that what Libby did was orchestrated by Dick Cheney, not necessarily the lying, but the leaking.
Right, absolutely. I think there's really overwhelming evidence that this was orchestrated by Dick Cheney, and I also think there's a great deal of evidence that the president was well aware of what was going on. And that's why, again, I think it's just this, it's one example of the overall work of this administration, which is that they will do anything they feel they have to do to keep people quiet.
Right.
And that's really the most frightening thing of all.
And I'll bet they're working overtime at the White House tonight trying to figure out what the new excuse will be tomorrow about why the president has no comment about the Libby conviction and sentencing.
Precisely. That's a very good point.
Elizabeth De La Vega, thanks for joining us. Once again, I recommend your book, U.S. versus George W. Bush et al. Thanks for talking with
us
today.
Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
She said I was a fine fellow. Isn't that nice? I'll take that to court. Coming up next, journalist Robert Perry joins us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Produced by Katrina Rill, Brian Urban is at the phones today at 888-5-PETER-B.
Hey, good looking. What you got cooking? How's about cooking something up with me?
I'll tell you what I got cooking. Dinner's ready. I went to dinnersready.com, chose 8 gourmet dinners, made an appointment, and went to their storefront in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove and prepared the meals there myself. Now I'm cooking them in my own home.
What's that you say? Dinner's ready?
That's right, dinner's ready. It's the newest concept in home cooking. They do all the shopping and chopping, and I get all the credit. If you're too busy to go in and make your dinners, they'll even do it for you. So sign up at dinnersready.com, stop by and see them in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove, or give them a call at 645-9100. That's 645-9100. Dinner's ready!
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Al-Qaeda in Iraq claims two missing American soldiers are dead.
We are going to continue with the hope and the prayers that they are still alive, and we hope for the best possible resolution.
Louisiana Congressman William Jefferson is indicted on bribery charges.
Mr. Jefferson corruptly traded on his good office and on the Congress where he served as a member of the United States House of Representatives.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. This is the web video posted by the group in Iraq believed to have captured three U.S. soldiers in an ambush south of Baghdad May 12th. The body of Private Joseph Anzac was found 11 days later, and now the group claims Private Byron Foti and Specialist Alex Jimenez were also killed. Adam Raisman, senior analyst at the Site Institute, has seen the video, which offers no proof.
It says that they had announced their killing. At no other point between when they announced the operation and when this video came out, did they announce the killing at all? So it's very difficult to ascertain whether they are, in fact, dead or alive.
In Oxford, Michigan, Foti's stepfather, Gordon Dibbler, is clinging to hope.
Doesn't show Alex or Byron. I'm encouraged with that. It is frightening, but I've had that fear from the beginning.
The military denounces the video.
We would hope that our missing soldiers would not be used as propaganda tools by the enemy.
Lieutenant Colonel Christopher Garver in Baghdad says the search for the two men will not stop. Now this.
Our next exercise, mall parking lot. Search lot K. Search and search. Can't find car? Run to lot L. Search and search. Dodge oncoming SUV. Jump left, jump right. Now sprint back to lot K because you forgot your bags. Look for car, look for bags, look for car.
Life is exercise. Snickers Marathon is energy. Great tasting, nutritious, long-lasting energy for the demands of your day. Grab a Snickers Marathon in the energy bar aisle.
Go ahead, Donald.
This story has everything. A triple murder on the beachfront of a celebrity mansion. A handsome local attorney and his ex-girlfriend defending. The whole town is talking. The celebrity...
James Patterson brings you Beach Road. 14 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list. Now in paperback. Murder, scandal, and deceit collide in Patterson's most shocking twist ever. James Patterson's Beach Road. Available now in paperback. The hottest book of the summer.
When FBI agents raided Congressman William Jefferson's Washington home nearly 2 years ago, they found $90,000 on ice in his freezer. Today, the Louisiana Democrat was indicted on charges that he took that cold cash and some $300,000 more in bribes for trying to set up business deals in Africa.
The 16-count indictment alleges a pervasive pattern of self-dealing, bribery, and corruption by Mr. Jefferson in violation of his oath of office, of his duty to the United States Congress in which he served, and of his duty to the citizens of the United States.
Federal Prosecutor Chuck Rosenberg. Jefferson has made no public comment, but his lawyer, Robert Trout, says he'll fight the charges.
He obviously is not happy about being indicted, but he's confident that when the facts are known, he will be vindicated.
It sounds like the plot of a spy novel. Nine people, including a former Laotian general, are charged in California with conspiring to overthrow the communist government of Laos. The U.S. attorney in Sacramento calls it conspiracy to murder thousands and thousands of people at one time. The government's new procedures for trying suspected terrorists were cast in doubt today when a military judge at Guantanamo Bay threw out the charges against a young man who was captured in Afghanistan at the age of 15. The reason? He's not classified as an alien unlawful enemy combatant, and only suspects so defined qualify for war crimes trials at Gitmo. CBS News legal analyst Andrew Cohen.
The ruling does not mean that all of the detainees are suddenly going to go free, but it does mean that their tribunals are not likely to proceed anytime soon unless and until this legal problem is solved, and I'm not sure anyone right now knows what the answer is.
The suspect in question is a Canadian national named Omar Cotter, who's now 20. He allegedly killed a U.S. soldier during a firefight. Car insurance companies accused of violating the Fair Credit Reporting Act won a battle before the Supreme Court today. CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato has the story.
GEICO, Safeco, and some other insurers charged higher rates for new customers who had poor credit scores. They didn't tell them that. Consumers across the country sued, claiming they have to be notified under federal law. The Supreme Court has created an important ground rule that benefits the businesses. Violations of federal reporting requirements must be shown to be willful, not simply careless.
Some good news for drivers. The Energy Department expects gasoline prices to come down 5 or 10 cents a gallon this month. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
A dozen for you today, hon?
Yeah, give me a few jellies, some Boston cream, a couple of crumbly peanuts, and some peace of mind, please.
Coming right up, sir.
What if you could buy peace of mind? Well, you can with Ford Lincoln and Mercury certified pre-owned vehicles, because we notice everything. Everyone must pass a 115-point inspection, and it's all backed by our 6-year, 75,000-mile warranty coverage. Now that's peace of mind.
And I'll have some total satisfaction as well.
See your dealer for limited warranty coverage details, or visit FordCPO.com. That's FordCPO.com.
What's on your summer travel wish list? The beach? Your mom's? Someplace you've never been? Well, Econolodge and Roadway Inn Hotels are giving you a free $50 gas card this summer to go anywhere your heart desires. With our Easy Choice Rewards program, just redeem 6 stamps for your free $50 gas card. After all, your wish list awaits. Call 800-4-CHOICE or visit choicehotels.com today. We'll see you there.
Earn 1 stamp per night. Maximum 5 stamps for qualifying stay. Redeem 6 stamps between 6-1 and 8-16-07 to receive gas card. For details, visit easychoiceonline.com.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
We're rocking the nation from the left coast. I'm your humble host, Peter B. Collins. Glad you could join us here on the program today. Just a quick reminder, tomorrow, Wednesday, and Friday this week, I have been tapped to sit in for Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman radio program. Tom was live from Dubrovnik in the former Yugoslavia in Croatia today, and he'll be back live from there on Thursday. He's attending a conference there that he's participating in. So I'm looking forward. Every station that carries the Peter B. Collins Show also carries the Tom Hartman program, so if you can stand it, you'll get a double dose from me over the next few days. Our lines are open if you'd like to join this conversation, and they'll be wide open next hour for your calls and comments in the free speech zone. The number's the same, 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372 is our toll-free number, and we're always happy to field your phone calls during interviews or during our wide open free speech zone segments, so feel free to participate. Robert Perry joins us this hour. He, of course, is a longtime investigative reporter and journalist who helped us understand the Iraq Iran-Contra issues of the 1980s. His most recent book is called Secrecy and Privilege, all about the Bush dynasty. And he operates the website consortiumnews.com. I hope you have that bookmarked and stop by there on a regular basis. They've got a fundraising drive underway right now, so if you can help support the work of Robert Perry and his colleagues, I encourage you to do so. Bob, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thanks, Peter.
You've been busy. There's no shortage of stuff to report on these days.
No, it seems to be overwhelming at times.
Yeah. I want to go back to a post that you put up right after the official Memorial Day, and it's entitled Bush's Killer Iraq Talking Points. And it is amazing to me that while Democratic leaders like Pelosi and Reid publicly tried to make the best of a very weak hand, given their lack of support in their respective caucuses for real clear policy changes regarding the occupation of Iraq, I feel that their fate was sealed early on because the Bush administration succeeded in imposing frames and language that the Democrats picked up on and kept repeating to their own peril.
Well, right. I think once the Democrats showed they would raise the white flag over the issue of they were not going to allow the troops to go without funding, when that was really a responsibility of both the Congress and the executive, it wasn't simply the Congress, but they basically said that at the end of the day, if the president rejects our proposals for timelines for getting the troops out, we will give him what he wants. It's sort of like if you were to go walk into a car dealership to negotiate for your new car, but say start off by saying, well, I'm going to pay the full sticker price, and then start negotiating from there. It doesn't usually work very well.
Right.
And so that was kind of where the Democrats, you know, their opening bid was, we will, at the end of the day, give you what you want. And then they did try to put through the timelines. That was vetoed. The House then actually did something kind of interesting, which had the support of a number of anti-war groups, which was to at least put Bush on a sort of a short leash.
Yeah.
And that was similar to some things that happened back in the 1980s on the Contra aid votes, where the Congress would give Reagan a certain amount of money, but then say, you've got to come back to us and justify that things are going okay. And that was sort of the idea of the 2 months. And that could have been extended. I mean, the idea was initially that there would be a compromise more to like 3 months, so there would be so the pressure would stay on that that Bush would either have to accept, say, a three-month extension of the money, or veto that and then face maybe getting nothing for the short term. So there was this game of chicken going on, but when the Congress essentially said, well, we'll give in at the end of the day, it left Bush no real incentive to make any serious compromises.
Well, even as Pelosi and Reid were making those trips to the White House and talking tough with the president in the face of his veto, we had people like Carl Levin and Senator Jack Reed of Rhode Island out there saying, oh, the Democrats will never vote to cut off funding for the troops. And that undercut whatever posture, and again, I'm a real pragmatist. I know that in the Senate in particular, the votes are not there for any drastic measures to cut off funding for the war, whether it's called funding for the troops or not. And in the House, there's a little more of a cushion for the Democratic position. But the Democratic caucus is deeply divided, and there are a lot of people who are afraid of a real strident position as represented by Congresswoman Barbara Lee of Oakland and on the Senate side, Russ Feingold. But again, what steams me is that the Democrats undercut themselves with the way they talked about these issues, and they permitted the Bush administration to frame it around the troops. And we know that of the roughly $100 billion, only nickels and dimes actually go to the troops, and at the very same time this battle's underway, the White House is threatening a veto of separate legislation that would bump a raise for the troops from a measly 3% to a slightly less measly 3.5%.
Well, right. There were other ways the Democrats could have tried to frame it, and certainly the overall idea of the troops wanting to be in Iraq is a little bit of a delusion. Anyway, many of them would prefer, I'm sure, to not be there anymore, and they feel that they're from the various reporting we've seen, a number of them have indicated to journalists even that they don't think they're making any real significant progress anymore, that they've been there on their third and fourth tours, and they're pretty much had it. So one could argue that if you really wanted to protect the troops and take care of the troops, you would, the first thing you do is get them out of there. But the other part is that the Democrats could have, if they had gone with some three-month extension and given Bush, you know, that and essentially without the timelines, but at least with the idea that it's going to be redebated in July and August, that could have kept pressure. And if Bush refused to do it, the Democrats could have canceled their Memorial Day recess and stayed in town and you know, kept battling with him. Instead, they made a run for the doors, and that has certainly been, I think, more of a problem for the Democrats than some of them may have understood. It, from what I'm gathering from a lot of the emails I get, there's real fury among people in what you, I guess, would be called the Democratic base, where there's a strong anti-war sentiment, where there is not a real eagerness to continue this conflict on indefinitely. And even though many of those folks were being pretty reasonable, they were saying, well, yeah, we don't like any funding for the war, but we will go along with some compromise, understanding the pragmatics of it. They felt betrayed. They had gone a long way with the Democrats, and then they felt undercut by this political cut and run that the Democrats did. So I think that's going to do harm for the Democrats. They've alienated not only their own base, but many independents who saw the Democrats as at least representing a hope to get this war to some conclusion, and many people felt their hopes were dashed.
Yeah. Well, and let's, at the risk of being real elementary here, Bob, the way things work is that an appropriation bill has to originate in the House.
Correct.
And certainly through the conference process, it can be massaged, amended, augmented a bit by whatever comes out of the Senate. But fundamentally, what the House begins with is the baseline for any appropriation bill. And likewise, the White House cannot unilaterally add to it. At least Bush hasn't come up with a signing statement that says, I'm doubling the money in this particular bill. So the control that Pelosi has in the House did give her, at least fundamentally, the opportunity here to put limits on the amount of funding originating for this particular supplemental. And that's where Murtha's proposal for a 60 or even a 90-day allowance made sense to me. It was a way to keep the pressure on and to keep the president coming back to the Congress asking for more, and that permitted that theoretically would permit them to continue to put conditions on such requests.
Right. By imposing a sort of a short-term granting of the money, that is in effect a condition. It's basically saying, okay, let's see how it's going, and then you've got to convince us again that this is worth re-upping. And the more you do that, especially in the situation we're faced with, where the surge was never, really almost nobody in that I talked to in military and intelligence circles thought the surge would do anything. I mean, they couldn't even get, when they were trying to do that war czar, they were trying to hire a war czar to oversee the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, they could not even get General Kane, who was one of the I guess architects of the surge, to agree to do it. They went through like 5 four-star generals, and frankly, to get a 4-star general to say to the president, no, these are retired 4-stars, they didn't have to go back, but they all refused to agree to take this position because they knew what it entailed, that this was a losing situation they didn't want to be part of. So they finally had to find a 3-star general who was active duty, who could not say no, but they ended up with somebody, General Lute, who was actually an opponent of the surge.
Yeah.
So now we're seeing the reports coming back from the field that not only are the American deaths rising dramatically, as everyone thought they would if this were implemented, but it's not having the effect that Bush at least pretended he thought it might.
Only 1/3 of the communities in Baghdad can be considered secure in any way, shape, or form. And that is a pretty sorry indicator of the failure to date of this so-called surge. We're going to take a break and return. Robert Parry is our guest, P-A-R-R-Y. His website is consortiumnews.com. And if you have a question or comment, bring it on now. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. I remain your humble host, Peter B. Collins. KRXA 540. Visit our website at KRXA540.com.
Forever love is free, let's talk forever, you and me.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
Terry McCarter of Clarion Mortgage is a lifelong resident of Monterey County and a truly dedicated, caring real estate and mortgage professional. With many years of experience, Terry always goes the extra mile for her clients. During your initial consultation, Terry gets to know your preferences and needs and then helps you choose the loan program that most precisely meets them. Terry takes the time to explain all details of the various options open to you, including any potential risks, and guides you through the mortgage process. If you're too swamped at your desk to stop by during the work hours, make a weekend appointment with Terry or see her after hours. Terry McCarter is your real estate and mortgage professional. Her offices are conveniently located in Salinas at 1271 North Davis Road, just across from Applebee's. Call Terry at 578-0773, 831-578-0773.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Ron Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Let's take a look at your drive in and around the Monterey Bay area. This look at traffic is brought to us all by Orking Pest Control. A termite queen can lay as many as 30,000 eggs a day. That is a lot of mouths to feed. Don't let them feed on your home. Call the experts at Orking for your free inspection at 1-800-ORKINGMAN. On these highways, we are dealing with problems. Southbound 101 just after Alvarado Road looks like a crash involving an overturned vehicle in the center divide, so slow traffic past that scene. Also problems in Monterey, northbound Highway 1 at the 218 interchange. A solo vehicle crash. It went down an embankment here, and injuries are involved. CHP already on the scene. No lanes are blocked again, but there may be a lot of curiosity slowing. In Gilroy, Highway 152 at Kenyatta Road looks like a crash here off to the right-hand shoulder. Two vehicles are involved at this point, and it's just your slow go. Some ordinary slow traffic for Highway 156 eastbound side between Castroville and San Juan Bautista. I'm Alex. That's your traffic on KRXA.
We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show. Lines available if you'd like to talk with me and journalist Robert Parry. 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. That's our number. Lead story, today's New York Times, the American assessment of the situation in Baghdad. We are able to protect the population and maintain physical influence over only 146 of 457 Baghdad neighborhoods. And Jake joins us from Arcata. Hello, Jake. You're on with Peter B. and Bob Parry.
Hey, Peter. Hey, Bob. I got a question for you. You know, the president and his minions in the Congress have been saying that we have to wait until September for General Petraeus' report on the surge.
See you in September. Sorry.
You know, and just look at what happened in the month of May. It was the third deadliest month in the war for American troops. You know, what a lot of us predicted unfortunately came true. The surge only led to more of our troops dying. Since we already know that this surge is a total failure, why are we waiting another 3 months to hear what Petraeus is going to say when we already know what he's going to say?
Well, I'm not quite sure what Petraeus will say. I think, you know, more likely than not, he'll try to emphasize whatever positives he can. He's the general and responsible for the policy, but he may come out and realize that he's having his men die for nothing. There are generals who have spoken up in this war and said this is ridiculous what we're doing. So I'm not quite sure what Petraeus will say, but the point you're making is, I think, right. This was not a change in military strategy. It wasn't even a change in military tactics, really. It was really a change in political tactics back home to try to get this additional money. Some new game in town to get the Congress to give him another $100 billion. But there wasn't really an effort, I think. There was never really a thought this would work. And frankly, when you get into the summer in Baghdad, when it's 120 degrees, and these American soldiers are being put in outposts around the city, not back in their bases where there is air conditioning and there is some creature comfort, but out in these outposts where the electricity comes on and off, where other soldiers have to bring them water and bring them food through dangerous situations, this is a prescription for massive losses by American troops, and it's being done not really because anyone thought it would work, but because it was a way to politically extend the war.
Well, we don't let politicians in Washington make those decisions, Bob.
Well, actually, we do, Peter. I mean, one of the talking points Bush has used, of course, and you know this, is that he has said, I want the commanders to decide. But what happened last December is very important for Americans to understand. This was a case where the commanders on the ground, Abizaid and Casey, said, we don't want more troops. That is actually going to hurt the situation to have more American troops because it will delay the training of the Iraqis and get them to take more responsibilities. The Joint Chiefs of Staff opposed the surge. Bush and his neoconservative political advisors in the White House overruled all the generals and fired the two on the ground, put in two more, Petraeus and Fallon, who they thought would actually go along with them, at least for the short term.
Mm-hmm.
And now Bush has the audacity to turn around and say, well, see, I'm listening to the commanders, after he had ignored the commanders or fired the commanders. But having politicians overrule the commanders, he then turns it around in the way he does and says, bald-faced to the American people, oh, you know, I'm just following the commanders, and everyone else should too.
And Bob, as you write in this powerful article, Bush's Iraq war talking points, while appealing to some Americans and frightening some Democrats, remain a potpourri of cherry-picked intelligence, irrational arguments, and outright lies.
The intelligence failures that we saw leading into this war have never stopped. And it's not that they're intelligence failures even. It's that the intelligence that goes against what Bush wants to do is ignored. Lies are imposed on it. Things are twisted. The actual intelligence, by the way, says that the goal of Al-Qaeda in Iraq is to keep the American troops there. There was an intercepted letter from December of 2005 from one of bin Laden's chief deputies, a guy named Mattia, who says, and the West Point Center on Terrorism has posted this, that he says, prolonging the war is in our interest. It's a letter to Zarqawi when Zarqawi was alive.
Mm-hmm.
And he's urging, what he's saying is we have to put down our roots. We have to stay, you know, moving slowly and consistently as we build our situation there. But prolonging the war, that is keeping the Americans in place, fighting them, is in their interest. And this is what the agents, the CIA and other intelligence communities agree with. Because they say, well, what really is happening here is that Al-Qaeda is using Iraq to both raise money, to bring in recruits, to expand its operations, and to keep the Americans from going after them along the Pakistani border. So this is a win-win-win for Al-Qaeda. But Bush then spins it and presents it as if Al-Qaeda wants us to leave. Al-Qaeda does not want the United States to leave Iraq. It wants us to stay bogged down in Iraq. And the whole idea about they'll follow us home and attack us if we leave there, their real plan is to keep us in Iraq, use Iraq to raise money, to train troops, to get more recruits, and also to attack the West. So how Bush is presenting it, these talking points, just like the talking points in 2002 and 2003 were wrong, these talking points are wrong.
Yeah. We're going to take a break and return with Robert Perry. He's with us for the remainder of this hour. We'll talk a little bit more about Bush's language and how the Democrats got snookered. Also about Bush's shift on global warming. And if there's time, we'll take a look at the UN's decision to put a tribunal together to investigate the assassination of Lebanese Premier Rafik Hariri. That's all ahead on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
There's a new full-service spa and salon in the heart of downtown Monterey at 397 Calle Principal. Gigi's Spa and Salon offers massage, facials, manicures, pedicures, haircuts, and styling, specializing in hair coloring, makeup, eyelash color, and extension, all wedding needs, and much more. Gigi's Spa and Salon is an experience that you must see to appreciate. It's a beautifully relaxing experience for both men and women. All the products used are the very best. If you are pregnant and want your nails or hair colored or perm, it's not a problem because all our products are odor-free and all natural. From now until June 30th, reserve a massage or body treatment or a facial, and you will get a free special treatment that is exclusive to Gigi's Spa and Salon. The Gigi's Signature Spa Shampoo. This is an experience your whole body will never forget. Call 372-0888 now and reserve your spot so you can treat your body to the unique services that await you at Gigi's Spa and Salon. Visit MontereyGigiSpaSalon.com for more information.
Andrew Speaker, the musical. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. The parents and parents-in-law of America's most famous TB patient, Andrew Speaker, told ABC Today they did nothing wrong by going ahead with the wedding of their children. It's like being in hell, said Speaker's father about the publicity, and we just want to get out. But when the news is hell, there's no better way to take the edge off than set it to music.
I saw it on the news. Isn't it strange? At a time when they strip search your grandma, that they can't stop a guy with a deadly disease. He says he's sorry. He says had he known that he wouldn't have flown. He denies that he tried to escape. He has the whole conversation on tape. Don't fly with me, Andrew Speaker. It's not that I don't like you, but since your lung disease is drug resistant, don't break your promise. Please keep your distance.
So far, by the way, the family and nearby air travelers have tested negative. Now this.
Smokey here. When you're a hardcore biker like me, it's nice to know that Geico Motorcycle Insurance covers most kinds of bikes and has money-saving discounts. It's reassuring. It's like I have an imaginary sidecar, and my guardian angel's riding in it. And he's brought plenty of juice boxes and muffins, and he's totally cool with sharing. Yeah, old Smokey's never been too good with metaphors.
For a free rate quote, visit Geico.com or call 1-800-44-CYCLE. Geico Motorcycle Insurance. Let's ride.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Sober Stones, do you have yours yet?
Big Sur Jade is now available for you. This rare, beautiful, deep green jade is found in a tiny cove south of Big Sur, used by Native Americans in healing for hundreds of years. Keep one in your pocket to remind you of your commitment to living life present and sober. Go to SoberStones.com. SoberStones.com for your beautiful pocket jade. Touch it, feel it every day. Look at it. SoberStones.
Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 33 minutes after the hour. Lines are open if you'd like to join us, and it'll be a wide-open free-for-all in the free speed zone next hour. You know the number. It's 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. Got some clips from the Democratic debate on CNN. I said debate, didn't I? I try to avoid that because these are not real debates. Although the candidates occasionally break out of the format straitjacket and offer meaningful debate-style comments, they're really joint appearances. And we'll play some of those excerpts for you and talk about that, among other things, coming up next hour. We continue with journalist Robert Perry from ConsortiumNews.com. Drop by that site, and you can pick up a lot of powerful information that somehow never makes it into the corporate media in this country. Bob, I want to continue for a moment here on your piece about Bush's killer talking points and how, despite his own verbal weaknesses, he gets good copy apparently and delivers it in a very reliable way from the people who put those words in his mouth from their perspective. But I'm looking here at the section of your commentary about Bush's speech to the Coast Guard's graduating cadets, and how he has taken Osama bin Laden, whom he ignored for a long period of time and told us, you know, it wasn't really that important to capture him. And now he's using him as a boogeyman and basically saying that we cannot leave Iraq because it would be doing what Osama bin Laden wants. Of course, he overlooks that our whole foray into the Middle East is something that Osama bin Laden could have only dreamed of in 2000 or 2001.
Well, in fact, according to various studies, he was dreaming of it. If you go even to the 9/11 Commission report, it shows that one of the reasons that the Al-Qaeda attacked the Cole in the fall of 2000 was to provoke an American military response, which Al-Qaeda felt would help them. What happened then, though, was initially the U.S. intelligence could not verify that it was an Al-Qaeda attack, so they basically told President Clinton that they couldn't vouch for it, they weren't sure, and by the time they were sure, they were in the midst of the transition to the Bush presidency. So it was sort of left hanging, and so Al-Qaeda comes back with another attack, 9/11, which the United States could not particularly ignore. So what happened, but the goal was always to bait the United States into a clumsy, counterproductive attack into the Middle East, which would allow Al-Qaeda, which was a ragtag group that had been really chased to the ends of the earth. They'd lost in every country in the Middle East. That's why they were all exiles living in caves in Afghanistan. They'd been defeated. They'd been defeated in Algeria. They were defeated in Egypt. They were defeated in Saudi Arabia, in Jordan, everywhere. And so they were stuck in these caves, and they were trying to figure out how to get themselves back more in the mainstream. And by drawing the United States in a clumsy way, and frankly, President Bush probably did it far beyond what they would have hoped with his promises of a crusade and so forth, that he went in there and not just attacked in Afghanistan, but then he turned against one of al-Qaeda's chief adversaries, Saddam Hussein, in Iraq. So basically, it was really more than they had dreamt for. They had dreamt for a clumsy response. What they got was even more than a clumsy response, a disastrous response. So, and as I said before the break, the intelligence is that al-Qaeda wants us to stay in Iraq. That by staying in Iraq, it is playing into al-Qaeda's hands, because, and that's what the intelligence shows. They want, as a guy Atiyah wrote, prolonging the war is in our interest. And he was speaking for bin Laden in that letter.
Yeah.
So what they want is to keep, it is sort of the classic, you might say the Brer Rabbit analogy, where they say they want us to leave, but they really want us to stay. It's reverse psychology. Now, publicly they say one thing, privately they say something very differently, which is publicly they say get out, privately they say we want you to stay. It's more likely that what they say to each other is what they really mean.
And you write that there are now some new harsh talking points that Bush is laying the groundwork for. And he once again invokes al-Qaeda and says that, they want us to do something and therefore we shouldn't. You quote, a few weeks ago, al-Qaeda's number two, that's Zawahiri, issued a video in which he gloated that al-Qaeda's movement of violence has forced the Americans to accept a pullout, about which they only differ in regard to its timing. And Bush goes on, we can expect al-Qaeda to continue its campaign of high-profile attacks, including deadly suicide bombings and assassinations. And as they do, our troops will face more fighting and increased risks as the weeks and months in the weeks and months ahead. Now, this is really amazing that he believes that he can flim-flam or whipsaw the American people so effectively, and the media really helps him do it, doesn't it, Bob?
Well, his argument is that that because there's going to be this review by Congress in September, that that's going to encourage al-Qaeda and other insurgent groups to kill more Americans in August. He's basically trying to lay off the blame for what's now apparently this disastrous surge policy, not on the disastrous surge policy, but on Congress for wanting to examine this in September. So he's already playing into the next cycle, if you will. And you're right, the press has done nothing. The press has done almost as little now to call Bush on his distortion of the intelligence as it did back in 2002 and 2003. One of my favorite examples, even as early as July of 2003, was when Bush started saying that Saddam Hussein had not allowed the UN inspectors into Iraq to check for WMD, when everyone who followed this knew that that was just completely untrue, that Saddam had allowed the inspectors in, and they were there searching around and going wherever they wanted. And it was Bush that forced them to leave in March of 2003, so the invasion could proceed.
Right.
And then 3 or 4 months later, he just changed the history, and he's done it consistently since. And the press has not called him on it. No one says, Mr. President, that simply isn't true. That's a lie. He did it as recently as this last news conference he held, where he makes reference to how Saddam Hussein had refused to disarm under the resolution 1441. But the fact was that Saddam did disarm. We all know that.
Mm-hmm.
And he accurately and honestly described the fact that he had disarmed. He did allow the inspectors in. He did comply. And despite his compliance, Bush invaded anyway. So, but Bush now pretends that there never was compliance. It's really an up-is-down world that Bush has sort of brought us all into, and the press, more often than not, sits there rather stupidly acting like it makes sense.
Well, and too often the Democrats don't take his comments apart and really explain to people how he is distorting, how he is misappropriating the record, and how he is fear-mongering to the American public. And then they wonder why they come up short when they try to, bargain with this guy. He doesn't need to compromise with the Democrats because he can slay them with, the rhetorical tactics that he uses and the way they serve up their own surrender.
One of the weaknesses I've seen in the Democrats now, really going back now a couple of decades even, is they don't fight on fact. They basically try to finesse the fact and try to get people to sort of transcend that. Maybe they'll have a good program or they'll have a nice speech, but they don't get in the trenches and fight for what the reality is. It's, for some reason, they just don't, it's not in them that much. Recently there was Senator Chris Dodd was on Meet the Press with Newt Gingrich, and Gingrich was presenting some of these talking points for the Republicans, and instead of challenging the facts, you know, that, that Al-Qaeda really does want us to stay, that's what the intelligence shows, Dodd sort of gives a nice speech about how we're not fulfilling the best of American principles, which is a fine little speech, but it leaves the American people not realizing that they're being lied to, not by only by Gingrich, but by the president and by many people who are presenting these arguments. So until the American people can get that help in seeing through this propaganda and these talking points and get to the truth, it's very hard to picture any long-term victory for people who want to see this war ended.
It also enables a kind of parallel truth where left and right have their own set of facts. And, of course, the right has far more sources, starting with Fox News and the Weekly Standard and other outlets. But there is this problem where, you know, Chris Dodd probably worries that the things he believes are facts will not resonate with people he's trying to persuade who, you know, are persuadable by Gingrich, if you know what I mean.
Right. There is this problem where that if you're inundated with misinformation, the truth sounds odd. And something I've tried to deal with both in my days when I was with AP and Newsweek back in the 80s and early 90s, And that's one of the reasons we started our website, conservativenews.com, in the mid-90s, was because there needed to be a way to sort of penetrate that problem, which was that the major media was not willing to fight either. The Democrats weren't really willing to challenge on facts. The major media was not really willing to dig into the real information.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt there needed to be another route, and we tried to do it through this Internet site we created. And we've had, you know, of course, some success, but not as much as we should. But the constant theme that we work on is, well, let's get to the ground truth, and let's explain it to people in ways that are easy to understand, and try to show people that there is a way to do this and to be armed with the facts. But sadly, even though we, for instance, we put a link to this letter from Atiyah describing what Al-Qaeda's real strategy is,
mm-hmm.
we even say how many paragraphs you have to go down to find the quote. But it still seems to be something that doesn't exist for the Democrats in Congress. They don't, or maybe, as you say, they're afraid that if they start talking in those terms, because everyone's heard Bush say 100 times that Al-Qaeda wants us to leave, if someone tells you the truth that no, they really want us to stay, that will sound odd. And people will laugh at them.
Well,
that certainly has happened to some Democrats when they have tried to tell the truth.
And I did not watch the joint appearance by Democrats on CNN in New Hampshire last night, but one of the sound bites that I've heard is Senator Hillary Clinton saying that, well, yes, we're safer than we were, but we need to be even safer. And to buy into that frame, that Bush's policies, either domestically or internationally, have made Americans safer, is just a crock. And that's some attempt to triangulate, I guess, where you don't disturb people by challenging the underlying lie. You simply try to build on it and, you know, put a little cherry on top and hope that it'll go down smooth that way.
Right. That has been a tendency of the Clintons going back to when Bill Clinton first entered the White House. As I've written about this in Secrecy and Privilege, where actually I start the book with this anecdote of him telling that some people he runs into while he's in the White House, explaining why he didn't pursue like the Iraqgate scandal, which was when the Reagan Bush people were helping to arm Saddam Hussein, mm-hmm. why he didn't pursue some of the Iran-Contra issues that were still pending when he took over, and he basically said, well, that would sort of get in the way, it would cause hard feelings, we had to deal with other issues. So this idea that truth is something that can be sort of set aside, and you can sort of finesse it. And you can, you know, sweep it under the rug and maybe count on some bipartisanship and then maybe move on to something else. It is like putting, you know, makeup on cancer. It ultimately eats away at the whole way democracy works. And the Clintons have never shown to me, either, you know, Bill or Hillary, that they understand that. That they understand the real importance of truth. And not just in their personal lives, but in more importantly, in how our government functions, that you cannot just keep lying about things that occurred and hope that you can then move to a new time. Those lies come back at you, as they came back to us, because we did not know the history of Iraq. Bush was able to present a history with Iraq that was false when he wanted to invade in 2002 and 2003. And similarly with Iran, we don't know, a lot of that history was falsified. So as we approach Iran and another set of crises, we don't know what that history is. So the American people are constantly at sea, and until we actually start focusing on what the reality was and not what these various spin points, whether by Republicans or Democrats, we're in trouble.
Very well said. Robert Perry, stay with us. We'll continue after the break, and we're going to shift to talk about Bush's little two-step on global warming. Maybe he figured if he changed his policies, Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany, would let him give her another shoulder rub at the G8 summit. We'll continue in a moment. Lines open if you'd like to talk with us at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
Our radio show for the whole family. Dysfunctional family. Stephanie Miller on AM 540, KRXA, 6 to 9 a.m. weekdays.
We were looking for an inclusive community, so we joined a Unitarian Universalist church where we can really live our values.
Did you know the American Red Cross, the League of Women Voters, the ACLU, and the SPCA were all founded by Unitarians or Universalists?
Imagine a denomination that walks its talk. When Martin Luther King Jr. appealed to clergy to join protesters in Selma, Alabama, more than one-third of the Unitarian Universalist parish ministers answered his call.
And Unitarian Universalists are still fighting for justice today. We're speaking up everywhere for marriage equality, for reproductive rights, for the environment, and for our civil liberties.
A denomination with progressive values makes a difference in today's world. Unitarian Universalists. Come visit our church on the Monterey Peninsula at 490 Aguajito Road at the top of Carmel Hill. Visit our website, uucmp.org, or call 624-7404.
Tomorrow Matters, hosted by me, Deborah Lindsay, will be moving from Sundays to a daily spot, Monday to Friday, 2 to 3 p.m. I'll still be bringing in the guests, and you'll still be calling in with your questions and ideas, and we'll still be working collectively to set the standards for a more sustainable future. But we'll be doing it 5 times a week. Starting May 14th, join me, Deborah Lindsay, right here on KRXA 540 a.m. for Tomorrow Matters, weekdays from 2 to 3 p.m., because for all of us, tomorrow really matters.
Every night, Jack Thomas camps out on a cold, lonely street corner. Tonight, some people almost brought him something to eat. Someone almost drove him to a shelter. Another almost brought him a warm blanket. And Jack Thomas, well, he almost made it through the night. Sometimes instead of giving, we almost give. But that's the same as not giving at all. Don't almost give. Give. Visit don'talmostgive.org. A message from the Ad Council.
Let's take a look at that drive in and around the Monterey Bay area. This look at traffic is brought to us once again by Office Depot. Office Depot has over 500 choices of ink, toner, and fax supplies in store or online. Office Depot, always low priced and never out of stock. That's their guarantee. Office Depot, taking care of business. On the highways, taking care of a crash still for southbounders along Highway 101. After Alvarado Road, it looks like the crash involves an overturned vehicle still in the center divide. It'll take a little while to clear. Watsonville checking in now. Westbound Highway 129 at Main Street. Two big rigs here are blocking the right-hand lane. Looks like a stall and a helper. Also in Monterey, northbound Highway 1 at the 218 interchange, a solo vehicle crashed. This vehicle went down the roadway here, so some injuries are involved. Also, slow traffic continues for eastbound 156. It's heavy through Castroville. I'm Alex. That's your traffic on KRXA 540.
Peter B. Collins Show. My guest is journalist Robert Perry.
Well, there's a little something that's been freaking me. I read it in the news, I seen it on TV. It haunts me in the night and creeps me in the morning. A spooky little thing called global warming. It seems our indispensable amenities, like airspray, air conditioners, and SUVs, are causing big emissions, all of which are forming a spooky little thing called global warming. Fluorocarbon strip away ozone. Can't seem to leave the rainforest alone. Our temperatures are rising and it now degrees. The vampires of progress have come home to roost.
Oh, yes, those vampires of progress. That's what contributes to climate change on this planet. And George W. Bush has had an apparent catharsis. He has figured out that it is a real problem, and he wants to do something about it, but not too much and not too fast. Robert Perry, is that a fair a fair retelling of the president's comments over the past week or so?
Well, I think so, though. I'm not sure how far he really had a catharsis. I'm not sure if he actually has changed his overriding views that global warming is not something that really needs to be dealt with. In a piece we did, a piece I put up last week at conservativenews.com, I went back to some of the work we'd done actually in 2000 when he was running for president. And he was actually drawing some of his data that he was using in speeches from a group called the Greening Earth Society. And the Greening Earth Society was a foundation set up by coal companies. And they were promoting the idea that global warming was real, but that it was actually beneficial, was a good idea. And the more carbon dioxide you could pump into the atmosphere, the better.
Because
it would, you know, cause some new land to be available for agriculture and so forth. And Bush was drawing some of his talking points from them at that time, back in 2000.
Well, you have a quote here where he kind of suggests that the internets, as he calls the internet, that the internets are contributing to increased electrical consumption and therefore part of the problem.
Well, he was using a figure of 8%, that the internet was drawing 8% of American energy, which was a figure that the Greening Earth Society had developed in an argument that there needed to be more coal-generated power plants.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the trouble was that most scientists involved were saying that, no, the internet does not draw nearly 8%, and that beyond the fact that it was more like 1% to power the what's needed for the internet.
Yeah, the other 7% is for the vibrators that people use while they're watching all that porn, Bob.
I suppose so, but the there was also the whole issue that the internet, by increasing productivity, actually saves energy. So people don't have to drive to the library to research. They can go on Google. They don't have to go necessarily shop at a mall. They can buy things. So, in other words, Bush was sort of misrepresenting the problem of the internet back in 2000. The point we tried to make was that look where this guy's getting his information, his science, supposedly scientific information. He was getting it from the Greening Earth Society, and what you saw from his NASA chief. The same day, or the day before he gave that speech,
right.
The NASA chief came out and said, well, yes, global warming is happening, but we don't really feel we need to do anything about it because it would be arrogant to think that that today's climate is the best one we might have. It might get better by heating up the Earth. So you still have this idea that is pervading this administration that, for whatever they're thinking, they feel you don't have to do anything about this. And these idea of aspirational goals, voluntary kind of commitments 20, 30 years into the future by these different countries that are producing the carbon dioxide and other global warming gases doesn't reflect the urgency that many scientists feel.
Well, and aspiration means we wish we could do something. And so it doesn't mean that we really are going to do anything. And Bush has always thrown an economic caveat in there saying that, you know, we won't do anything that would weaken the American economy. And today China responded in kind, saying that they don't feel it's fair for a developing nation like China to be forced to accept rollbacks in their emissions because it would disadvantage them to the United States. I mean, they're simply parroting his point of view.
Right. If you get people all together and say, gee, what do you feel like you want to do, whatever they may say, oh, gee, it'd be nice if we did this, then they look at, well, but you haven't done enough. So they start negotiating themselves down away from any kind of serious commitments to less and less serious commitments. And then even those, there's no binding requirement. There's no way to sort of force people to do things, which fits sort of what Bush also recommended for Texas when he was Texas governor, if you remember. He did not want to have binding regulation in terms of emissions from around Houston, where there's a lot of, you know, refinery and other industrial activity. And so you now have still some of the worst air in America, if not the worst air, in those places because it's all reliant upon voluntary steps, as opposed to having the government say, everyone's got to do their part, and we're going to enforce it. And Bush has always avoided that, and he seems to now be moving that to a global scale, that he doesn't want to have nations have to be required to meet standards. So whether it's a real change or not, I don't know. It seems more like words to me than action.
I agree. And by unveiling this just in front of the G8 summit, the curveball that he has thrown is that he essentially wants to throw away the scheme that has been developed from Kyoto going forward and say, well, let's have a new scheme. And that, of course, will take time to argue about and, you know, figure out what size of table to sit around to talk about it. And it will buy him time so that he really will not be expected to do anything before he leaves office.
Right. I think that's that. You can read it that way. And that fits obviously with also his approach to many of these problems, including Iraq, that if he can just slow roll the issues, even if it means more destruction, more death, more harm, that at least it sort of moves the problem onto the next president, who then will have to make the hard, unpleasant decisions that can be attacked.
Yeah. Well, Robert Perry, I always learn a lot from you, and you're great at bringing back the history that many of us have either overlooked or forgotten about. I want to thank you for joining us today. It's been a great hour.
Thanks, Peter.
And go to the website, consortiumnews.com. If you're so inclined, they could use your financial support. Coming up next, we throw open the phone lines to see what happens. And I hope you'll call. Share your comments on the Democratic joint appearance on CNN last night, on the issues we've discussed about how Bush used rhetoric to take advantage of the Democrats. Lots more we can talk about, too. 888-5-PETER-B. The Free Speech Zone is next.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. This could be a serious setback to the Bush administration's effort to put suspected terrorists on trial. Military judges at Guantanamo Bay have dismissed the charges against two detainees, including the man who allegedly served as Osama bin Laden's driver. The judges say neither man falls under the jurisdiction of the military commissions established by Congress last year. CBS News chief legal analyst Andrew Cohen says this is likely to force changes in procedure.
Even before this stunning ruling, there was talk on Capitol Hill from Democrats that the new tribunal law had to be changed to make it more fair, not just to detainees, but also to resident aliens here in the state. So any attempt to get around this ruling would necessarily involve talk of larger changes in the new law.
The rulings do not mean the men will go free, at least not immediately. The U.S. military in Iraq says the search for two missing soldiers goes on despite this new Al-Qaeda video. It surfaced today. It shows the military IDs of Army Specialist Alex Jimenez and Private Byron Foudy and claims they were killed last month after being captured in an ambush. A third man, Private Joseph Anzac, was found dead. He'd been shot repeatedly.
We will look at the video for any kind of intelligence that we can gather from it.
Lieutenant Colonel Christopher Garver is a spokesman for the multinational forces in Baghdad. Louisiana Congressman William Jefferson was indicted today. Multiple counts accuse him of taking more than $400,000 in bribes. His lawyer, Robert Trout, issued this statement.
Congressman Jefferson maintains his innocence, and he urges the public to suspend judgment until the facts have been established in a court of law.
When the investigation started, the FBI found $90,000 in Jefferson's freezer. Science is making slow progress in the battle against cancer. CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato has the latest developments.
For the first time, a treatment has been found that extends the lives of advanced liver cancer patients. Only about 3 months of life are added with Nexavar on average, but tumors often stopped growing. Also being reported, longer lives for patients with a common incurable lymphoma treated with Bexxar.
The duration of responses is quite remarkable.
At least 8 years, says University of Michigan researcher Mark Kaminsky.
With half the patients still not relapsing from the disease after 1 week of treatment.
Kaminsky, a co-inventor of the drug, receives a share of royalties. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
Bill France Jr. died today at his home in Daytona Beach. Reporter Paul Kaminsky tells us he made NASCAR what it is today.
He took a sport that was very popular in the Southeast, had its roots with moonshiners, transformed that into a marketing engine that moved merchandise, inspired fans, and entertain millions of people. He brought it from the backwoods to the boardroom.
France was 74. The Dow up 8 points today. This is CBS News.
Ah, summer. It's travel time. Vacation time.
Dad, are we almost there?
We're not lost, are we?
Honey, wasn't that our exit?
Daddy, what does detour mean?
Did you even look at the map?
This little travel reminder is brought to you by Garmin Street Pilot GPS, where you'll find all the directions you need.
Turn left on Pine Street.
For the most worry-free vacation ever. Garmin, the leader in navigation.
They were a family in search of opportunity when they went west on the Oregon Trail in 1843. They were threatened by lightning, wind, and river crossings. They were overjoyed upon reaching Oregon and building their new home. They are waiting to be found.
Meet your ancestors. Learn their stories. Search millions of records and family trees at Ancestry.com and start your journey of discovery today.
Looks like we're getting a brief respite from rising prices at the pump. CBS News correspondent Dan Revive has the latest on that.
For a second week, the U.S. government report on gasoline prices shows they're down. The average for regular now $3.16, down 5 cents from a week ago. The Department of Energy adds that a short-term peak was reached last month. With supplies now adequate, the price will fall some more, probably by another 5 or 10 cents a gallon. But starting in July, with plans to expand refineries again postponed by several companies, gas prices will likely rise through much of the summer. Dan Revive, CBS News, Washington.
The University of Maine class of 1957 held its 50th reunion over the weekend, and for Richard Bastow, all was forgiven. As a freshman, Bastow twice climbed to the top of the campus steam plant smokestacks and once to the top of Stevens Hall to paint a big 57. He was never caught, and Bastow only recently confessed. At the reunion, he was granted a full pardon. Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Our next exercise, mall parking lot. Search lot K. Search and search. Can't find car? Run to lot L. Search and search. Dodge oncoming SUV. Jump left. Jump right. Now sprint back to lot K because you forgot your bags. Look for car. Look for bags. Look for car.
Life is exercise. Snickers Marathon is energy. Great tasting, nutritious, long-lasting energy for the demands of your day. Grab a Snickers Marathon in the energy bar aisle.
Go ahead, Donald.
This story has everything. A triple murder on the beachfront of a celebrity mansion. A handsome local attorney and his ex-girlfriend defending. The whole town is talking. The celebrity...
James Patterson brings you Beach Road. 14 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list. Now in paperback. Murder, scandal, and deceit collide in Patterson's most shocking twist ever. James Patterson's Beach Road. Available now in paperback. The hottest book of the summer.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime, toll-free, at 1-888-5-PETER-B, and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
I got lines open. We pay for the calls. You've got opinions. Pick up that fancy phone and use it. And you can do your part to pump it up here on the Free Speech Zone on the Peter B. Collins Show. I've been a dude. I getting old or what? I was just doing a little calculation, and it was 30 years ago this month that I saw Elvis Costello and the Attractions for the first time. They played the Warfield Theater in San Francisco one night, and I caught the act. 45 minutes, 22 songs. They just really ran through it. And the next night, they played at the Civic Auditorium in Santa Cruz. And I drove over the hill and caught that show. I will never forget my back-to-back experience with Elvis Costello. And at that time, he was considered a punk rocker. And I don't think people hold that impression of him today. And a very talented guy, and that's how he busted onto the scene 30 years ago. It's hard to believe. I'm Peter B. Collins. This is your free speech zone, and I have all but one line wide open right now. I want to encourage you to call. We've talked about the media. We've talked about the Democrats who gathered last night. We talked a little bit with Elizabeth De La Vega, a former assistant U.S. attorney, about the sentencing guidelines and how they are likely to be applied to Scooter Libby. Tomorrow's going to be a big news day because we've got the Libby verdict coming in. Jason Leopold, who, of course, has been following the case for us since the beginning, will be with us as usual Tuesday at 4:30 Pacific time. We're also going to talk to Murray Wass, a journalist who covered the Libby trial. And we actually scheduled him for an article he's written subsequently about the U.S. attorney scandal. So we will blend those two topics with Murray on the program tomorrow. But Jason Leopold has been doing Yo Person's work. Check out truthout.org. He's got a video up of an interview he taped last week with David Iglesias, the U.S. attorney who was fired in New Mexico. And today, I haven't seen it yet, but they just posted a video interview that Jason recently did with Ambassador Joe Wilson. And that's very timely as well for the Scooter Libby sentencing tomorrow. So check that work out. That's your homework. And then Jason will be joining us as usual tomorrow between 4:30 and 5 Pacific time here on the Peter B. Collins Show. We'll go to your calls here in just a moment, and the calls are stacking up. Thank you. I appreciate it when you respond. But over the weekend, another dastardly terror plot was broken up and reported in the American media. This was an alleged attempt to blow up jet fuel tanks at Kennedy Airport outside New York City. And as we drill down, you get past the first day story. Here's the headline in the New York Times follow-up story today, Monday, about this plot that was busted up just over the weekend. Court papers portray plot as more talk than action. Money and training are called lacking. Now, I'm not going to take a lot of time to talk about this. I want to make a single point. That the JFK jet fuel plot, the Stockton Mosque, the Lodi Mosque case, the Lackawanna case, the Miami case, all of these were splashed into the media as just another effort by the Bush administration that has paid off and protected Americans. And by the third day, every one of these stories is diminished. And by 90 days from the time of the first report, the story is reduced to almost nothing. And what is at the center of each and every one of these cases is a paid government informant. The guy in Lodi got $240,000 to frame the kid and the father. A similar thing occurred in Miami, where it was the paid government informant who egged these people on and said, "We ought to have a loyalty oath to Osama, don't you think?" And when you read the details on the schlubs who were busted over the weekend, at its heart was 63-year-old retired airport cargo worker Russell DeFreitas, who the complaint says talked of his dreams of inflicting massive harm, but who appeared to possess little money, uncertain training, and no known background in conceptualizing or planning a terror attack. A law enforcement official described it, capability low, intent very high. Well, In the next week or two, we're going to find out who the government informant was at JFK and how much he or she got paid. And the story will drift once again into the background. Now to your calls. Bob is up first on line one here from North Carolina. Welcome, Bob. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Well, hello, Peter B. I'm glad to talk to you.
Well, I'm glad you called.
Your last guest finally got into the issue of global warming, and there's been something I've been wanting to say about that for a long time.
Well, let it out.
Okay, number one, I'm a reader of The Nation magazine.
Me too.
And as you're aware, then, that there's been a discussion by a certain Alexander Cockburn about global warming.
Yeah, he pronounces it Coburn.
Coburn, okay, let's be fair about that.
Yeah.
I'm not scientifically trained particularly, but I am an outdoorsman. Are you?
I'm a sailor. Does that qualify? I don't hunt varmints like Mitt Romney.
I don't know. This is more a forest issue. But one of the things I've noticed, you know, I'm a little bit disturbed about the emphasis on carbon dioxide.
Okay.
And more aware of having lived in the city and lived in the country and thinking in common sense terms that, for instance, anybody who's lived in the city and drives out of the city into the country finds that the temperature decreases at least 10 to 20 degrees. You know, the issue is that the human impact upon warming is directly related to urbanization. That means clear cutting of forests, paving and giant parking lots, and building buildings and building air conditioning systems. All of these things, create heat.
All right, I understand that, but I would say that the smokestacks, whether they're in town or out of town, certainly add more particulate and CO2 to the atmosphere than your typical skyscraper.
Well, sure, I don't deny that, but the thing about the CO2 is I think for the average person it's a little bit too elite for them to understand.
All right.
You see what I'm saying? I'm trying to get more down to the common man and down to the ground where anybody who lives in the city who can't see the sky at night, who can't see the stars in the sky until they leave town, who know that, I grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio, for instance, and it was horribly hot in the summertime.
Bob,
back in the 50s.
Bob, I was born and raised in Cincinnati.
I think I remember hearing you say that.
What part of town are you from?
I was raised there in the 50s and 60s, my man.
And what part of town?
East Side at Hyde Park and
no kidding.
Mount Lookout.
Yeah, I married a woman from Mount Lookout. My grandmother lived in Hyde Park, and Mom still lives out on the East Side in Marymount.
Yeah, that's where I was first lived. I lived in Mount Washington when I was first taken there in the early 50s. I was born in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and raised in Cincinnati. I left there in 1968. Anyhow, that's kind of off the subject. I'm really trying to point out more of the common sense kind of things about global warming rather than...
All right, well, give me one more example. Explain that helps us understand your point of view.
Let me diverge from that a little bit. I have a book right here in front of me by a gentleman named Dr. Barry Commoner. Are you familiar with him?
Yeah, sure.
And it was written in 1969, and his technology is now slightly dated. But global warming is about more than environmental issues. It's also about affordability. It's about help for the third world.
Mm-hmm.
It's about decentralization. And it's about, then that brings us back to corporate dominance. In other words, what Barry Commoner was saying in this book he wrote way back in the Carter administration was that that decentralized electricity is our salvation, that there's no central power plant issue that will help us, you know. Now I'm getting a little bit lost here, but the idea was that...
Well, let's pull it out here. First of all, we're dubbing you Cincinnati Bob, so whenever you call in, whenever you call in again, you just be Cincinnati Bob.
Well, I'd rather be dubbed Asheville Bob, because that's my home, and I love Asheville, North Carolina.
Okay, well, have it your way. I got to run to a break here, Bob, but I appreciate the call today, and I think I get the drift of what you're saying.
Yeah, the decentralized energy is the solution and also the help.
Okay, gotcha. Thanks for the call, Bob. That's Asheville Bob via Cincinnati. All right, we'll go back to your calls right after this break. There's a line open for you, toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Tomorrow, Wednesday, Friday, I'll be sitting in on the Tom Hartman program, Coast to Coast. Hope you can catch my act.
Hey, this is Stephanie Miller. You're listening to the station that encourages you to think for yourself. What a concept. AM 540 KRXA.
Why are realtors from Los Angeles spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to defeat Measure A here in Monterey County?
It sure isn't because they want to save our farmland.
The developers and supervisors oppose Measure A because it puts an end to their cozy development deals.
Cozy development deals like the massive Rancho San Juan development that was approved by the Board of Supervisors but rejected by 76% of voters.
It's true. 76% of the voters opposed Rancho San Juan because it was wrong for Monterey County. But the developers pushed it through anyway.
That's why we need to pass ballot Measure A to protect our quality of life.
Measure A is a common-sense, community-minded plan to control growth that was written by the people of Monterey County.
It lets the people decide how fast we should grow.
So join the League of Women Voters and the California Nurses Association, who all support Measure A, because it lets the community have a voice about our future.
And that's why the Community General Plan Committee paid for this message. Vote yes on Measure A.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares. The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Take a look at your drive in and around the Monterey Bay area. This look at traffic is brought to you by Toyota Prius. Toyota Prius with an EPA estimated 60 miles per gallon in the city. Visit your local Toyota dealer and find out why the Prius is the car more people said they would buy again. Prius, yes. Well, this traffic accident has been there about an hour in Watsonville, and it is still causing slowdowns westbound along Highway 129 at Main Street. Two big rigs have been just cleared to the right-hand shoulder at this point, so improvement, but you'll still see some slow traffic backed up for about a mile at this point. We're also looking at problems in Carmel, Rio Road at Highway 1. Watch for a two-vehicle crash. They've pulled into a nearby parking lot, so improvement again here, but still slow traffic past the scene. A new crash for Monterey, northbound Highway 1 at Fremont Street. Two vehicles are involved and crews are headed out. Also, we're looking at problems in Monterey, northbound Highway 1 at the 218. This is a solo vehicle that went down the embankment earlier on, so crews are still on the scene. I'm Alex.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. This is the Free Speech Zone. And your calls and comments are welcome. Do you know my house rules here? You can talk about any subject from any viewpoint from anywhere within the sound of my voice. And we pay for the call. In fact, I write the check myself. It's toll free, 888-573-8372. That's 1-888-5-PETER-B. In a second, I'm going to play some excerpts from last night's CNN broadcast of the joint appearance of Democratic candidates in Manchester, New Hampshire. And if our buddy Brian in Manchester is listening today, give us a call and give us that first-person, up-close-and-personal account. Not that you got into the studio, but you're right there in Manchester and maybe have some scene-setter comments you can offer. First, we go to Dave in Phoenix. Hello, Dave. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Yes, Peter. Good afternoon. You know, we must be very afraid, very, very afraid. They're going to blow up our airport.
Yeah.
Heard a interesting call to another program earlier today by a fuel handler from Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he knew this baggage handler cargo loader from on the job, and that he worked for, I believe he said the airline, the air carrier was Greenleaf, or Greenlee Aviation, which is a CIA operation.
Oh.
Pay no attention to the Attorney General, the U.S. Attorney in Arkansas behind the curtain. let's worry about these pipelines.
That's really rich.
Interesting twist.
That is, Dave. We'll check that out. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
good to hear from you in Phoenix. By the way, Friday night, I was subbing on late-night John Elliott program on Air America Radio. Got to reconnect with a lot of my old pals in Phoenix, Barbara and Cave Creek, and a few others. And that was really fun. I appreciate hearing from you. All right, here's a clip from CNN and the joint appearance. They called it a debate, but it was the Democrats lined up to face questions from Wolf Blitzer and questions emailed in from the internets. Let's listen here.
Consistently third in national polls, John Edwards took it to him this evening, commending his top two rivals for voting against an Iraq spending bill, blasting them for failing to lead.
They went quietly to the floor of the Senate, cast the right vote, but there is a difference between leadership and legislation.
It produced the first dust-up of the evening as Obama took exception.
And I think, John, the fact is that I opposed this war from the start. So you were about 4.5 years late on leadership on this issue. I think it's important not to play politics on something that is as critical and as difficult as this.
Running for the nomination of a fiercely anti-war party, Joe Biden was the odd man out, the only one to have voted in favor of the Iraq spending bill. Biden explained he could not in good conscience leave U.S. troops without funds. Though refusing to be directly critical of his colleagues, Biden managed to get his point across.
I knew the right political vote, but I tell you what, some things are worth losing elections over.
Perched at the top of the pack, Clinton's debate mission was to be front-runner, stay above the fray. She had her sights set on the general election, not her Democratic colleagues.
The differences among us are minor. The differences between us and the Republicans are major, and I don't want anybody in America to be confused.
Clinton and Edwards clashed only gently when he repeated his assertion that the war on terror is nothing more than a bumper sticker.
And that's exactly what it is. It's a bumper sticker.
She politely dissented.
I have seen firsthand the terrible damage that can be inflicted on our country by a small band of terrorists, and I believe we are safer than we were. We are not yet safe enough.
Now, that's the line. Again, I didn't watch the whole debate. I didn't watch any of it. I'm just watching these clips. And I'm really offended by that. Because for Hillary Clinton, again, I think Candy Crowley's voice over there was correct. She's aiming at the Republicans. She's looking down the road at the general election. And she's not really talking to people like you and me, Democratic primary voters. But to allege that we are safer, that is simply a crock. This president has made America at much greater risk. And, you know, we have defended ourselves Maginot Line-like from the attacks of the past, but we're doing precious little to prevent attacks in the future. And I do not, for one, dismiss that there is something called Al-Qaeda and that there are people who want to use terrorist tactics to hurt us. But Edwards is right that the war on terror is a bumper sticker and that the Bush administration has been doing diddly to counteract terrorism. They entered into a misguided war and occupation in Iraq that has only bred more terrorists. It hasn't helped solve any of the problems. Let's listen a little more here. Oh, clip's not rolling. Go ahead, you can do it. Well, I guess the Internet is upset that I interrupted Hillary Clinton in the middle of her comment there, but I'll see if I can get this rolling again.
The group touched on immigration, the crisis in Darfur, health care, education, and taxes. But time and again, the war dominated the stage, as it has the campaign.
Candy, why is Senator Clinton trying to emphasize that there is not that much division between those folks on stage?
Because she's the front runner, and when you're that, you don't need to attack, you don't need to go on the offense. You need to simply stay up there to put in a strong performance, which she did.
All right, that's all we have time for in this segment. I'd like to hear your review and your reaction to the Democrats on the stage last night. And Republicans hit New Hampshire for a CNN Love Fest tomorrow night. We'll be checking that out, too. More of your calls and comments coming up next here in the Free Speech Zone. Give me a call toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. I'm Peter B.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join ThinkerToys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why ThinkerToys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. ThinkerToys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com.
The healthcare system is broken. That doesn't mean you have to be. Capitola Physical Therapy helps you return to the level of function you need with skilled personal attention. Whether it's golf, tennis, walking, or simply getting out of bed and maintaining your balance. Capitola Physical Therapy understands, cares, and knows how to help. Call Capitola Physical Therapy at 475-1200. That's 475-1200.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet radio show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and travel across the U.S. and around the world. I interview nationally known writers, winemakers, chefs, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make our world so delicious. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. for tasty news shows, or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Listen in and have a good appetite.
From the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Lord, I'm amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Listen.
We continue in the free speech zone. Lines available if you want to comment. 888-5-PETER-B is my toll-free number.
Listen. I'm working 40 hours, 6 long days, and I'm highly embarrassed every time I get my pay. And they're working everybody. Lord, they're working poor folks to death. And when you pay your rent and your car notes, you ain't got a damn thing left. Ain't that a bitch?
Yes, it is.
Somebody doing something slick.
Yeah, they are.
Got me wondering which is which. Dig a ditch, ain't that a bitch?
Now, ain't that a bitch, Dollar Bill Jefferson? I mean, just because you had $90,000 in marked cash in your freezer doesn't mean you're guilty of being bribed or planning to bribe other people. But finally, some action is moving forward. Louisiana Congressman William Jefferson received more than $500,000 in bribes and sought millions more in nearly a dozen separate schemes to enrich himself by using his office to broker business deals in Africa. That's according to a federal indictment that was revealed today. And these came almost 2 years after the celebrated raid on Congressman Jefferson's home in Washington, D.C. area, where they found the $90,000 in cash stuffed in his freezer. Now, right there opens up a question that I've always enjoyed asking on a talk radio program. And maybe you're the kind of person who listens, but you don't call in because, you know, you're not razor sharp at debating politics. I can understand that. I have an easy question for you. Where do you hide your money? Imagine that somebody gave you $100,000 in bribe money. You peel off ten grand for walking around money, and buy some maybe fancy new shoes or a new car. Where do you hide your money? And if you want to change your name, disguise your location so that predatory listeners to the Peter B. Collins Show don't come and break in and try to steal from the place where you hide your money, I'd be happy to take your call. I'm just curious. if you'd like to share that information. 888-5-PETER-B. But back to Bill Jefferson, the indictment includes 16 counts: racketeering, soliciting bribes, wire fraud, money laundering, obstruction of justice, and conspiracy. Possible maximum sentence of 235 years. He's the first U.S. official to face charges under the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, which prohibits corporate bribery overseas. And by the way, he proclaimed his innocence. And in America, even a congressman with cash in his freezer is presumed innocent until proven guilty. But it's about time that there's been some progress in this case. Of course, investigators busted into his office on Capitol Hill, and that produced a storm of controversy from people who seemed more concerned about that precedent than his personal situation. And all I can say is the Democrats are better off without Bill Jefferson. He appears to be as corrupt as those who took golf trips from Jack Abramoff, as Duke Cunningham, who pled guilty to accepting $2.5 million in bribes. And I know it's been a great deal of a great source of frustration to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi that the most she could do was get him off. He was on either appropriations or one of those committees that doles out money. And she did get him to resign from that committee. And now Pelosi is expected to push this week for Jefferson to be stripped of his seat on the Small Business Committee. Pelosi quoted as saying, "If these charges are proven true, they constitute an egregious and unacceptable abuse of public trust and power. Democrats are committed to upholding a high ethical standard and eliminating corruption and unethical behavior from the Congress." Yes, even Democrats. And I know some of our secret Republican listeners think that I'm not fair and that I only talk about Republican corruption. This is not the first time we've talked about Dollar Bill Jefferson, and apparently won't be the last. But if Democrats are corrupt, you will hear me be just as critical as Republicans who may be or are proven to be corrupt. So we had a bunch of callers on the line, and I guess the lengthy commercial break is discouraging to people, but there's nobody on the line right now. So if you would like to call in here to the Free Speed Zone, I'd be delighted to hear from you. You won't wait long on hold, and we'll get to hear your comments. 888-5-PETER-B is the toll-free number, 888-573-8372. And while there are no calls on the board here, I'd like to take a moment to get your advice about something. Last week, in talking with callers on this program, we kind of came up with an idea dealing with Cindy Sheehan and her quote-unquote resignation as the face of the anti-war movement. And over a dozen people, let me look at the list here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 people have pledged between $25 and $100 if we could make an approach to Cindy Sheehan and buy the 5 acres in Crawford, Texas, that she purchased 2 years ago for about $52,000. And as I mentioned, I thought it'd be kind of neat to use the Duke Cunningham approach, but in a legal and above board way, which is to say that if we could raise enough money, I'd like to buy that property and give Cindy Sheehan a respectable return on her investment. I have no idea if property values have gone up in Crawford, Texas the last few years. I tend to doubt it. But I think it's kind of a neat idea to approach her and see if we could buy it. So the advice I ask you for today is that over the weekend it surfaced that a right-wing group is attempting to buy the property from Cindy. And she, through a spokesperson, her sister, I think, has said that she will never knowingly sell it to Bush supporters or those who oppose her position on the war in Iraq. And so my fear is that our nice little idea, a neat idea, as Ollie North used to say, is something that could get caught up in the crossfire of a kind of ugly effort by some conservatives, or at least Republicans, to buy the property. So I'd like to hear your thoughts. My thinking is that we should offer simply to convert these pledges to donations to Cindy Sheehan, because she has, paid a lot of travel expenses. It appears she spent all of the money that came from the government settlement as a result of the loss of her son Casey in Iraq. And I only want to do something that would not only reflect well on us, but also would be positively received and perceived by Cindy. And if the Crawford property is going to turn into some sort of a political football, it just strikes me that it's not a great idea to pursue that. So let me know your thoughts on that. 888-5-PETER-B, that's our toll-free number. All the lines are open right now. It's the free speech zone, and at the moment, nobody is exercising their free speech rights. You can change that. Just pick up the phone and give us a call. This one's close to home. A San Jose, California subsidiary of Boeing was accused in a lawsuit last week of providing crucial technical support for CIA flights in which captives were taken to foreign countries and tortured. The process is called extraordinary rendition. That's the government term for it. The best nickname I've seen for it is torture taxi. And that's the title of a book by two young reporters who started off writing an alternative weekly newspaper article about the rendition program and got so much information, particularly from amateur plane spotters around the world, that they had enough info to publish a book, and a powerful one it is. It shows the actual aircraft identified by tail number, and in some cases the tail numbers were changed over the last few years to try to make it harder to detect, which plane is which. But the torture taxi book has remarkable detail about the origin of some of these flights and the charter companies, which may or may not be CIA fronts, which supply the airplanes and handle all of the logistics. Well, one of these appears to be Jeppesen International Trip Planning. It's based in San Jose, and the ACLU lawsuit is accusing Jeppesen of violating international law by enabling the CIA to secretly take the men to countries known to torture prisoners. Jeppesen provides a variety of flight planning services, including routing, weather forecasting, fueling, obtaining landing permits, and arranging ground transportation. And the lawsuit says the company has supplied those services to the CIA for the program of extraordinary rendition. Since 2001, according to this suit, Jeppesen has arranged at least 70 flights at the CIA's direction to countries such as Morocco and Egypt, which the whole world knows use torture in a routine fashion. That's a quote from ACLU attorney Stephen Watts at a news conference in New York. And he went on, without the participation of companies like Jeppesen, the program could not have gotten off the ground. Mike Bounds, a spokesman for Jeppesen, said the company doesn't violate law or international law. He declined to comment further, saying the firm's arrangements with its customers are confidential. Surprise, surprise, surprise. And the CIA didn't respond. Bush administration officials say they only transfer subjects to other countries after receiving assurances that the inmates will not be tortured. Yeah, you believe that? Others who allege they were flown by the CIA to foreign nations and tortured have tried to sue the U.S. government without success. One plaintiff who we've talked about on this program many times, Khalid El Masri, a German, said he was abducted in Macedonia, December 2003, flown by the CIA to a secret prison in Afghanistan for 5 months of interrogations and beatings, and then he was set free on a hillside in Albania after the captors realized they had the wrong man. And when he tried to sue, an appeals court in Richmond, Virginia, upheld the original dismissal of his suit, saying that CIA secrets might be revealed if the case proceeded. And that's the catch-22 that the Bush administration so far has successfully used to evade and avoid court jurisdiction over many of these issues, which appear to be flatly unconstitutional and violate American law under the Constitution as well. So that's a very interesting status. I think we'll have to track down the Trainspotter guys, the authors of Torture Taxi, get them on the show and see if they know a little bit more about this company, Jeppesen, in San Jose. All righty, now that it's time to take a break, the lines are lighting up. You stand by there if you're on the phone. We'll get to you in just a moment. And there's still room for another caller or two, so grab a line and we'll chat with you in the next segment. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You're in tune with the Peter B. Collins Show.
Like people who talk funny, listen to 70 Minute in the Morning on AM 540 KRXA.
Seize the day and save money. That's the slogan of Stardate Solar, a company providing you with the highest quality solar power for your Monterey Bay Area home or business at the guaranteed lowest price. And that's the idea behind the Stardate Solar Power Hour. I'm your host, Dale Julin. Every Saturday at high noon, our nationally known cast of energy experts will tell you the latest news about the coming solar economy. And you'll also hear about the politics of solar power as well. The Stardate Solar Power Hour, Saturdays at noon and at StardateSolar.com.
I'm Todd Hurlbert, and I invite you to listen to The Week in Politics at our new time, 7 p.m. Monday nights. We're Monterey's hardest-hitting political hot time. We cover local politics, also tell you what's going on in Washington, D.C. And most importantly, we take your calls and find out what you think. So if you haven't listened to us before, find out what we're all about. Monday night, 7 p.m. It's The Week in Politics. See you there.
These United States, you have many rights. You have the right to assemble. You have the right to free speech in a free speech zone. You have the right to an attorney. You have the right to a speedy trial. Well, not if you're in Guantanamo. You have the right to privacy. No, wait. No, the FBI can read your mail and listen to your phone calls. America, where are your rights? Join Billy Sunshine, and we'll find them for you.
The Billy Sunshine Show, right here on KRXA 540 AM, Sundays 3 to 5.
Take a look at your drive home. This look at traffic brought to you again by Cortisone 10. Is there a picnic in your plans? Plan smart and don't forget to take along Cortisone 10. Cortisone 10 takes the sting out of insect bites, poison ivy, and rashes. So ditch the itch with Cortisone 10. On these highways in Monterey, still northbound Highway 1 at Fremont Street, it is a crash. It is now off to the right-hand shoulder. Two vehicles, no injuries. Meanwhile, in Opal Cliffs, a problem now. It's off freeways. It's Portola Drive at 41st Avenue. An injury crash, unfortunately. A bicyclist is down on the roadway in lanes of traffic, so some slowing past the scene. If you could take an alternate, that would be great. In Hollister, Santa Ana Valley Road at Fairview Road, there is a solo spin out here as well. It is off to the shoulder. Crews are already on the scene. I'm Alex, and that's your traffic on KRXA 540.
Music of the moment from Gnarls Barkley. One of the great songs of 06. And it's just called Crazy. The next few days, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday, your humble host will also be sitting in on the Tom Hartman program, Coast to Coast. So it's on all of the great radio stations that carry this program. So I hope you'll catch it, and I hope it doesn't give you overdose conditions from me. John in Carmel Valley, you're next in the Free Speech Zone. Welcome.
Peter, earlier, one of your guests had the comment that he thought the Congress just didn't have it, the Democratic Congress just didn't have it in them to oppose the war. And it may be just stating the obvious, but I couldn't agree with that more. I thought and thought about and listened as well to many opinions, and many of them I thought were valid, but it still seems inexplicable that they so failed to get the message that not only the voters tried to give in November, but the perils, the financial and human perils of continuing this war, they don't get it.
Yeah.
What do you think the fate of the Democratic Party is going to be about over this? Because so many on the left are just more than disenchanted. They may well leave for good.
Well, it's a series of problems, and it's very slippery in my view, because the support from the left wing of the Democratic Party was tenuous and skeptical. And now many people, and I would put myself in that camp, believe that the Democrats aren't sincere about ending the war, and that they will continue to play politics. And, you know, there is one reasonable interpretation of their moves, which is the number one, they want to, as much as they can, hang this around the neck of George W. Bush. They think that will redound to their political benefit at some point, hopefully as soon as 2008. And they have the calculation that most Americans are not passionate about this issue. And, you know, they're not marching in the streets. They're not really demanding strong action and change. And so particularly the kind of thick-skinned incumbents will take the position, what have I got to lose by going with the flow here? And after all, 98% of members of the House get reelected almost automatically. And why should I stick my neck out like a Barbara Lee or a Lynn Woolsey or, you know, somebody who's seen as extreme like Russ Feingold in the Senate? And so I can't come up with any kind of an inspiring or honorable answer to your question. I can only see that Democrats are in a kind of craven way protecting their political donor base, protecting their own incumbency, and saying, I don't want to take unnecessary chances here. And, of course, you and I reflect on that and say, yeah, but over the weekend, 14 more soldiers of our country died in Iraq. And last month, 120-something died. And, you know, the cost of this political calculation is clearly measured in human life and in our tax dollars being flushed down that sewer in Iraq. And so that's a long way of saying, I don't really know the answer, but it's frustrating. And I am concerned that the Democrats will erode the activist base and be left with just people who don't really see that there's much difference between Democrats and Republicans. And then we're back to a replay of 2000, with the Holt bill coming through and likely to be approved this week, locking in the voting machines that many of us feel are at least one source of the Democrats' loss of power.
Well, it's also possible that Clintonism, which I'm getting more and more critical of than I ever thought I would, not only kill the Democrats here, but it's like member in Britain, Blairism, killed the Liberal Party over there because they never mustered a real opposition to that war. There was no political opposition. It never came from the conservatives. There were individuals who got disenchanted and made a lot of noise, but the party essentially held with Blair. Mm-hmm. And his successor, Brown, if he ever comes forth, is supposed to be as much a supporter of Blair's overall foreign policy and war policy as Blair himself.
Yeah, he's just more boring, if you can imagine that. Adam in Trinidad, are you there? Oh, Adam dropped, and let's see who's on line three here. Good afternoon. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show. This is Arlen in Monterey.
That's right.
Hi, Arlen.
Here. By the way, that's a good analysis to that guy's question. I think the Democrats are looking long-term and just kind of making sure that Bush gets total responsibility and hoping by 2008 they'll be in a much better spot. But the question I had was, I noticed it seems like, I know the Congress, and you know, the Congress has the power to declare war, but they don't seem to ever do it.
Yeah.
You know, I think the last declared war was World War II, if I'm not mistaken. And what I don't understand is, why is that? What are they so afraid of? Why won't Congress declare war?
I don't have a simple answer to that. We have had a couple of interesting discussions, including, I'm trying to search for his name, a professor from Ohio State University, is a constitutional law expert, who came on the program one day and talked to us about war powers and the history and the precedents. And that same day, we talked to your congressman, Sam Farr. And it motivated him to try to do something. And the next day, the third day, he introduced legislation in the House, a two-clause, saying that we hereby repeal the authorization for military force from October of 2002, and we instruct the president to bring the troops home forthwith. In simple terms, the Congress has ducked its authority. And part of it does appear to be an excessive deference to presidential power and the so-called commander-in-chief, but I think it's mistaken. I believe that Congress needs to assert its right and that it can't write more blank checks. I hope that people have learned from what they gave Bush in October of 2002 that we never see that again. But, Arlen, your question lingers, and we'll address it in a future program. Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
To you. I'm Peter B. Collins. Catch you tomorrow. Same time, same stations.
Again, happy trails.
Pacific Grove Liquors is the one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wine, spirits, and beers at very reasonable prices. Whether you seek the ideal California or imported wine, quality distilled spirits like top shelf tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and premium vodkas, PG Liquors is your beverage outlet. Love beer? PG Liquors boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales and lagers, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand your wine, beer, and liquor store.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
You know, I,
The show on KRXA 540.
The,
weekdays from noon to two.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. A shaky video complete with soundtrack shows what Al-Qaeda claims to be the ambush south of Baghdad in which three U.S. soldiers were captured. One of them was later found dead, and this video made public today claims the other two were also killed. CBS News Chief Foreign Correspondent Lara Logan has more.
The release didn't surprise the U.S. military because they'd already found a copy during a raid 2 weeks ago as they searched for their missing soldiers. Although it shows their ID cards, the tape doesn't show any video of the soldiers themselves, dead or alive.
The U.S. military says its search continues. U.S. military judges at Guantanamo Bay have tossed out the charges against two suspected terrorists, including the man who allegedly drove Osama bin Laden. Miami Herald reporter Carol Rosenberg is there.
In short, the defense attorneys, the American defense attorneys for both Osama bin Laden's driver and a Canadian accused of killing a soldier, found a flaw in the system that the Pentagon had established after Congress rewrote the legislation for the first war crimes tribunal since World War II.
This is likely to prompt another look at the law. In the meantime, both men remain in custody and could still face trial. When the investigation started nearly 2 years ago, FBI agents found $90,000 in Congressman William Jefferson's freezer. Today, CBS News correspondent Cheryl Atkinson reports the Louisiana Democrat was indicted on bribery and other corruption charges.
The FBI has tracked about $500,000 in cash payments received, saying Jefferson sent bribe proposals and bills in writing, often on congressional letterhead and emails. Jefferson's attorney says none of it is true.
There is no suggestion that he promised anyone any appropriations. There were no government contracts.
The indictments are likely to jumpstart a House Ethics Committee investigation into the case, which has been stalled for months. That could result in Jefferson being expelled from Congress. Cheryl Atkinson, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
A medical transport plane with six people aboard has gone down in Lake Michigan shortly after takeoff from Milwaukee. Pat Rowe is a spokeswoman for Mitchell Airport.
The pilot was in contact with the air traffic control tower.